Dr. Jennings is a human rights activist about, the Sudan and Iraq. And my goodness, I'll tell you, he knows everything there is to know about those two situations. So we'll be talking to him just a little later on in the program. And I do apologize for those of you on the Internet. We had a little problem getting our stream going, but it's up and going now, so don't worry. We're on the air, on the Internet, and on the air as well. I knew I'd get that right sooner or later. Lots going on this week. Of course, we had the 9/11 report come out, commission report. We have the Sandy Berger scandal, if you will. We got the convention getting ready to crank up. Hey, let me ask you. What do you think? What's the good of the conventions anymore? Do you think we really need to have conventions anymore? I don't know. I think they've lost a lot of their luster over the years, and the platform's all but decided. The candidates is decided. I don't know why we have a convention anymore, except to have a little fall draw, a little fun and fun and games and speeches, and a little excitement, maybe a bump in the polls. That goes for both sides. I don't know why we do it anymore. It seems like. Maybe, just my opinion, seems like hundreds of millions of dollars down the drain. Look at the price of security this year they're spending on both those. Ooh, terrible price. So, anyway, just my personal opinion. I, as one who loved the conventions in the old days, it was really fabulous in the old days. So, anyway, we had a lot on the news this week, as always, but one thing was suspiciously absent this week, and maybe you noticed it too. And I was thinking the other day, I was looking through my notes and saw something about the war, and I thought, war, what war? Did somebody say there's a war going on? I watch the news pretty regularly, and I don't remember seeing anything about a war this week. Let's see now. There was, like we mentioned, the Sandy Berger deal, where, according to the highly respected Senator Saxby Chambliss, the highly ethical senator from Georgia. Man, they're cranking some good ones out up in Georgia, aren't they? Woo! Him and Bob Barr and Newt Gingrich and, oh, God, what a crew. And, of course, our good friend Zell Miller. Anyway, Chambliss, I heard Chambliss on TV saying that Berger supposedly stuffed secret documents down his pants and in his socks and then walked out of the archive room with enough top secret material to make Alger hiss envious. And, of course, what a coincidence that the great Sandy Berger espionage episode was exposed at the same time the 9/11 Commission report was made public. Didn't you find that a little strange? I did. And, once again, those wacky guys over at the White House, that crazy crew, showed how forgetful they are because they at first they said they didn't. Why, gee, we didn't know anything about this Berger thing. No, we didn't know it. No, we didn't know anything about it until it was made public. But then, as always, a couple days later, they remembered that quite a few of the White House staff had known about it for a long, long time. But, of course, none of them leaked it now. No. It's just another coincidence, like when Valerie Plame's name was made public. They didn't know anything about that either, of course. And then there was the 9/11 Commission report. While listening to the media, I found out that 9/11 was all the CIA's and Bill Clinton's fault. I didn't know that before. It was all the CIA and Bill Clinton's fault. Bush was completely free from any blame at all to hear the media. I didn't know that either, did you? But then later on in the week, it was finally reported that there was plenty of blame to go around. That darn CIA is mostly responsible, though. Of course, Tenet fell on his sword. And the CIA's reports to the White House about Iraq were wrong. The trouble is that they weren't wrong enough for the White House. That's right. Every time they submitted a report to the president or the vice president, they were sent back to see if they could get it more wrong. Over and over again, the CIA's reports were found to be lacking the kind of content the White House wanted to see. Go figure, Did someone mention a war? Well, as it turns out, maybe we're talking a war with Iran now. We're picking a fight with Iran. It seems there's evidence which shows that maybe they were the real bad guys involved in 9/11. Well, along with Bush's good friends, the Saudis, of course. after all, we do need to get it right. We don't want to be going around the world killing thousands of the wrong people needlessly. No, sir, we wouldn't want to do that. it'd be a tragedy if we ever would attack a country because we blamed them for 9/11 and terrorism against us and then found out that, oops, we're wrong, sorry about that, we killed 10,000 of your innocent citizens just to get a couple of guys we really wanted. No, we wouldn't want that to happen. A, because it would be a horrible thing to do, and B, it would make us look like fools to the rest of the world. So maybe it was Iran we needed to attack, or was it North Korea, or maybe Syria? You know, you look at this whole situation, you think, so many bad guys, so little time. You know, but don't worry, someday we'll get the right ones. And, well, another thing. There must not be a war going on anymore, because I heard Mr. Bush say, and I love this, I heard Mr. Bush say he is now the peace president. That's right, Mr. Bush is the peace president. I guess he just can't make up his mind, because just a couple of short months ago I heard him proclaiming over and over and over again that he was the war president. I guess he must have realized that that must not sound too good to folks during an election year, so now he's transformed himself into the peace president. Has a nice ring to it, doesn't it? The peace president. Kind of helps us all forget that messy old war we used to be involved in over in Iraq. You know, things are much better over there now. Of course they are. 42 Americans were killed in Iraq in June, leading up to the turnover government. You know that they said things are going to be so much better afterwards? And with only a week to go in July, 45 have been killed. Wait a minute, that can't be right. More U.S. soldiers killed in Iraq during the month after Mr. Bush became the peace president than were killed in the month before he became the peace president. You know, I could be totally wrong, but I see something wrong with that story. Well, maybe it's just me. But like I said earlier, war, what war? Either it's over, or the White House, aided by their right-wing media lackeys, just don't want to talk about it anymore. What do you think? I'd love to know what you think. As always, your opinions are valuable here. And by the way, you can call us. If you're local here in Lee County, Florida, call us at 479-5540. In Collier County, you can call us at 263-6570. And for all you folks around the world on the Internet, you can call us at 888-602-7500, 7501, 7502. 7503 and 7504. That's a toll-free call, and we do hope you'll give us a call. And let us know what you think about all these issues there are to talk about right now. You know, another one of these things only in Florida, of course, living here, and I know those of you that don't live here think we are the laughingstock when it comes to voters' rights and voting, and you're right. It's the truth. I've never seen anything quite like it. But I followed a little story that happened the other day, and this might not seem like a whole lot to some of you, but living here in Florida and being particularly sensitive to all this voter fraud and everything we had in the last election, I found this interesting. And I also found it interesting from the point of view that I now know that these Republicans will do anything to try and win this state again. And of course, you know, they're going to have Jeb Bush behind him again. He's going to do whatever he can to throw his weight on the side of his brother, his big brother. Definitely not his smarter brother. I do believe Jeb is smarter than the shrub. He has to be. Hell, everybody's smarter than a shrub. But anyway, up in Jacksonville this past week, a gentleman by the name of Dario Cruz, he's lived in the United States for 16 years, but just became a citizen last week, as he and about 200 other immigrants were naturalized. And Dario Cruz takes citizenship oath at the University of North Florida last week. And one of the things he'd always wanted was to register to vote. But when he was offered the chance to do that, right outside the ceremony, mind you, he knew something wasn't quite right. The place on the form where you're asked to choose Democrat, Republican, or Independent, well, gosh, it was already filled out for him. Yeah. According to Cruz and his family, every form was checked off Republican. Now, his wife, Linda, is a Republican. She asked what was going on and was told the woman registering voters said they were with a Republican organization. And his wife said, I'm a Republican. I was very angry with that. If they want to register whatever party, you shouldn't try to dictate to people what party they're going to register, who they are going to vote for, because you don't have any freedom. You know, these new citizens that were coming out and maybe didn't know much of what was going on were all registering Republican, not by choice, but by somebody else's choice. And that's the kind of thing that goes on here on a very, very regular basis here in Florida. I'm scared to death over what might happen with this vote coming up in the 2004 election. We are on the lookout for it, and we've got plenty of people that are going to be observing the polls and all that, but I still worry about it given what happened the last time. And of course, along that line, that vein of thinking, the Republicans would do anything to try and win this election. Just another little story here up in Detroit on just how hell-bent these people are on doing anything they need to do to win this election. Story come out, Democrats blast GOP lawmakers suppress the Detroit vote remark. Democrats on Wednesday denounced a Republican lawmaker quoted in a newspaper as saying the GOP would fare poorly in this year's election if it failed to, quote, suppress the Detroit vote, unquote. Now, here in Florida, we know all about suppressing votes. Know all about it. State Representative John Papageorge, a Republican from Troy, Michigan, acknowledged using a bad choice of words, but said his remarks shouldn't be construed as racist. In Detroit, he said this, and he wants us to take him seriously that this wasn't a racist remark. You know, Papageorge was quoted in the July 16th edition of the Detroit Free Press. That's the big paper up in Detroit. He said, if we do not suppress the Detroit vote, we're going to have a tough time in this election. Well, 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 well. I think you're absolutely right, Mr. Papageorge. If you don't suppress the Detroit vote, you will have a tough time in this election, particularly since Mr. Bush thumbed his nose again last week at the NCAA convention and was received very lukewarm-like at the Urban League get-together. So I don't think he's going to come out with very much of that vote. And I would say in Detroit he's going to have a problem on his hands when it comes up to the vote this year. But there they are talking about suppressing. At least I'll give the guy, I'll give the guy credit. I mean, he came out and said it in public. Yeah. Hey, let's go to the phones. By the way, 888-602-7500, 7501, 0203, and 04, and locally 479-5540 in Lee County and 263-6570 in Collier County. We got Bill in Fort Myers. Bill, welcome to the show.
How you doing, guy?
Great.
And my favorite song this week is "This Land Is Gonna Vote for Me." Well, that was a great thing.
Oh yeah.
You remember that the Republicans set back the environmental regulations 30 years, and then had the nerve to call it clear skies? But I think they've topped themselves now.
Oh yeah, I mean they've got such a knack for doing it. What was it? The Clear Air Initiative and the Save the Forest Initiative. And they're really good at those.
Well, Dick Armey, Mr. Mediocre, he belongs to this think tank called Citizens for a Sound Economy, and now that think tank has been combined with Empower America.
Yeah, you know, we mentioned, and I know you remember this, Bill, we talked last week, Empower America is a group funded by those Koch brothers.
Oh, that's right.
Right-wing extremists and big, heavy-duty, hardcore Republicans. So now you're saying they have an association with...
They have combined, and their new mission under Dick Armey is to, quote, find some balance to balance all this huge amount of money from Mr. Sorensen. You know, the Republicans are so broke, they don't have any money.
Right.
So now they're going to send out volunteers to work against Mr. Sorensen. Now, here is...
George Soros you're talking about.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the slogan they're telling their people is that you can do more with your hard work than they can do, meaning Sorensen, with daddy's money. That's their slogan. Think about that.
Jeez. I tell you, is there nothing they won't stoop to? I mean, here they are. Dick Armey's the head of this organization, and it's about as radical right-wing as you get. and the Koch brothers, and I'm not talking...
Not Coca-Cola.
No, sir. Oil. The Koch big oil company, one of the largest private companies in America. And we talked about a lot about them last week, but here they are doing this backdoor, well, vote registration drive, signature drives for Ralph Nader.
Another Republican joke was Reggie the registration truck. Remember that? They had a big semi-trailer, and every time anybody went in there, which was usually young people, they registered Democrats, so they had to get rid of that thing.
they're looking... you know, Bill, what this all points out. It all points out to me that these boys really, really seem desperate to me. It's hard to believe that this is an incumbent president we're talking about.
And the Republicans are the ones pulling away now, because the Republicans, a real Republican, yes, would like to get a tax cut, but they were told that their tax cut was going to cause more jobs to come about and to revive the economy. And there has been a little spurt in the economy, but nothing to justify the billions of dollars on all these tax cuts. And the real Republicans, I think, are going to stay home.
Well, we're starting to hear that more and more. I think the people, you know, the rank-and-file Republicans and not your fat cats, I think some of them are wise enough. The polls are showing that.
Well, one other thing, I have to say this again because it keeps coming up, that the right wing is trying to blame the fact that the FBI and the CIA don't communicate is because Janet Reno and Bill Clinton wouldn't let them talk to each other. But if anybody would just check any history book, it goes back 30 years to Senator Frank Church, who put that law on the books for a good reason, to stop the Watergate. Every time they get close to Nixon, he'd bring in the CIA and tell the FBI to back off. So they finally had to make a law that they couldn't talk to each other. And that was 30 years ago. And how we're going to blame Janet Reno for this is beyond me.
Well, you know, Janet has got broad shoulders. We all know that. But they've blamed about everything they can on her. And, my goodness, Clinton... everybody knows everything's Clinton's fault. I mean, I've known that. You know, like we said, the Titanic going down was Clinton's fault. So,
and Carl Bernstein, the guy that uncovered Watergate, was interviewed this week, and the name Tom DeLay came up, and he just looked in the camera and he said, you know, that Tom DeLay is such a disappointment. He's supposed to be the majority leader, and all he cares about is the lobbyists and going back to Texas to be a big bully in Texas. He's not even taking his job seriously. And I don't know if you're aware of this guy, but a lobbyist company in Washington, D.C. cannot hire a Democrat. They have to be a Republican, the lobbyist does. And it has to be not in name only. That lobbyist has to come and talk to Mr. DeLay to make sure he's the right kind of Republican, or that lobbyist company can't hire him. And that's how deep this corruption's running.
Oh, he's running it with an iron hand. You know, like we said last week, there's a guy I don't think you'll see at the convention. Do you think you see him up on prime time giving a speech? I'll be surprised if he is, Tom DeLay.
Oh, he is. You know, when they study history and wonder about the experiment of the Republicans actually being in charge of this country and what went wrong, the first chapter is going to be Mr. Tom DeLay and the Speaker Hastert right there with him, and they're going to be the two biggest reasons that the Republicans went into a collapse.
I think you're exactly right. Bill, thanks so much
for
your call. Hey, we're going to pause for a break right now. You are listening to the Guy James Show, 1200. No, I guess we're not going to pause for a break right now. Okay, I guess they're not ready. Anyway, we're going to talk a lot today about the lengths they'll go to win this election. There's so many things coming up. Yes, Reuters, I believe it was. No, it wasn't either Reuters. But this story about Dick Armey's group. I mean, what's up with that? I mean, they're trying to register people for Ralph Nader. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about Ralph Nader a little later in the program about what has happened to him. I mean, please. Ralph Nader, God, I think he's given away all the ethics and morals he ever had. I used to think he was a moral guy, but not so much anymore. Hey, we're going to pause for that break right now. You're listening to 1200 WPTK, Fort Myers, Florida. The Guy James Show. We'll be back in just a moment.
Restoring the liberal media, The Guy James Show.
When I was 12... my father was killed in an industrial accident at a
vacant lot
where he worked. My mother insisted I stay in
the highway on-ramp
to get an education. So she took a job waiting tables at a
parking garage
to support us. She worked double shifts. And on her break, she would pick me up from
the highway on-ramp
and drop me off at the big
office building.
And I'd spend hours and hours just reading books. I remember every Saturday we'd have breakfast at the
parking garage.
And I'd tell her what I had read. And her eyes would just light up. Because she knew I'd end up in college, not working at the
vacant lot
like my dad.
When we lose a historic place, we lose a part of who we are. To learn how you can help protect places in your community, visit nationaltrust.org. History is in our hands. A message brought to you by the National Trust for Historic Preservation and the Ad Council.
Alcoholism within the family is a lot of work. You struggle to cover up the problem, put all your energy into avoiding conflict, focus on hiding the problem from others and yourself. But, you know, sooner or later, you discover that all you've done is paint yourself into a corner. That's why there's Alateen. If someone's drinking is affecting your life, there is help.
Call 888-425-2666. To help them, you have to help yourself first.
Hi, my name's Maria, and I'm alive today because I was given CPR last year by Rick.
Who took a class with the Red Cross after I received blood from Jamal, who gave blood
after being encouraged by my friend Angela.
Who helped Jamal's whole family get the help and support they needed after losing their home to a fire.
When we come together, we become part of something bigger than us all. By getting involved with the Red Cross, you never know how many people your actions will affect. To get involved, visit redcross.org. The American Red Cross. Together, we can save a life.
In the morning. I saw the Keenan Ivory Wayans interviewing some actress, and you couldn't watch it. It was so painfully lame.
Baby, you got a nice booty. You know what I'm saying?
By the way, General Sweeney's going to be on Vibe tonight.
So, General, what's up? What's up?
If your radio sounds funny in the morning, you're listening to Imus in the Morning.
You know, it's like when my son acts up. It's best to ignore.
Better to whip him.
Day 6 to 10 on Power Talk 1200.
You've heard the right. Now all that's left is the truth. Guy James.
Yes, sirree. Back with you with America's very best Democratic liberal talk show. And I mean that. I really do. I don't know. I better give out the phone numbers again. 888-602-7500, 7501, 02, 03, and 04. That's a toll-free call, folks. You can call us. We've got a couple of lines open. And here locally, 479-5540. Be glad to hear from you on anything we have to subjects we bring up today here. I know that just about all of you saw the news that came out. When was it? Thursday? I think it was Thursday. Maybe Friday. Reuters first broke the story that Mr. Bush's military records have been found after all. You know, last week, or maybe was it 2 weeks ago, I'm not sure, they said they'd been accidentally destroyed, and the copies too, and now they've found them. God, I wonder if we've had this much trouble with everybody else's military records, or is it just Junior Bush's? I don't know. I don't know. But the thing is, the documents received that were released yesterday by the Pentagon included two faded, computerized payroll sheets showing Bush, and this is important, was not paid during the latter part of 1972, and they offer no evidence to place Bush in Alabama during the latter part of 1972. Now, I don't know. This seems highly questionable to me. But I, in the spirit of always being fair, I want to give Mr. Bush the benefit of the doubt. And, you know, I saw the story about the Pentagon, which is now found in Mr. Bush, you know, they now found, and they weren't destroyed after all. And I wonder what the story is behind this whole episode. You know, anyway, I was thinking that perhaps I've not given Mr. Bush a fair shake on this AWOL stuff. And I know this has been following him around ever since he ran for governor down in Texas. And he never answered a question then, and he's never answered a question now. And, you know, while it's true that these recently discovered records show that he was not paid during the time in question, for all you cynics, that doesn't necessarily prove that he was AWOL. Or not there. Take your pick. Huh? So I'm trying to be fair here. And I think I've got a perfectly logical answer as to why there are no payroll records to prove Mr. Bush was ever in the garden, Alabama, like he said he was. Yes, it's true that not a single human being has come forward with any proof that he was there, and I might add, despite the $10,000 reward for such information, no one has come forward to claim that money, but the economy's really good right now, so maybe nobody needs it, you know. And or maybe all those who were in the guard with Mr. Bush in Alabama just haven't heard about this little flap. That's possible too. I'm going the extra mile here. Anyway, I think I know why the payroll records prove that he wasn't paid during his Alabama duty time. I think Mr. Bush, being the son of a well-heeled Republican like his daddy, who was a congressman at the time, don't forget that, I think Junior Bush probably just went to the officials in the National Guard and asked them not to pay him. That's reasonable, isn't it? After all, he didn't need the money, so why bother with the pittance that the National Guard paid at the time? It had to be nothing but cookie jar money. I think that sounds reasonable, don't you think? Of course. So what I want to know is why are all of you naysayers continuing to bring this whole thing up? Mr. Bush has said over and over again that he served and got an honorable discharge. I've heard him say that 100 times. I served and I got an honorable discharge. So why not just let it go? I mean, after all, we know Mr. Bush would never lie about a thing like that, don't we? Don't we? Huh? Don't we know that? Oh. Well, I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt, and I'm still thinking maybe someday, somehow, some way, he'll find some actual evidence to prove that he was in Alabama. I don't know. But so far, in about, let's see, he's been president 3 years, and what was he, governor of Texas for, what, 6? I'm not sure about that. Still, nobody has found any evidence to be able to prove. I remember one guy came forward several months back and says, yeah, I served with George Bush. I remember him in the mess hall and all that. And then the reporters got to checking and found out that this guy wasn't even in at the same time George Bush was. So that was an attempt to prove that he was in the National Guard in Texas. Why doesn't he just come forward and say, hey, my dad was a congressman. I got special treatment. I got out. So what the hell? I wish, you know, that's what he should have done, if that's the case, anyway. Going to go to Julio in Fort Myers. Julio, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's going on, guy?
Oh, we're busy today.
Oh, for sure. You were talking about the Sandy Berger thing, and so far everybody in the media has been coming out and talking about how the reason why it was leaked was to cover up the 9/11 Commission report. See, but there was a story that came out earlier this week that was really, really, like, not paid attention to, which involved the nuclear lab in Los Alamos, that was robbed. They stole some top secret information from this lab. And for some reason, that Sandy Berger incident seems to cover that up. And I don't know about you, but I'd be a little bit more concerned about someone stealing information, top secret information, from one of our nuclear labs than from someone, you know, stealing notes that he drew up himself and that other people still have copies of. What do you think about that?
Yeah, stealing. No, you know, the Republican attack machine has done such a good job on this week. I have to give them credit.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we'll talk more about that during this whole show, but, you know, they've come up with the lies, the blind quotes, innuendo. Of course, they've been saying now that he was stuffing the things in his pants and in his socks. And listen, I got a challenge for any of you right-wingers out there. You know, the archive room has cameras in it. If there's any film or video of Sandy Berger stuffing stolen notes in his pants and in his socks, I'm sure we'd have seen him on the air by now.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's a Republican administration. They got control of everything. You better believe if they had any video of that, and that room is constantly videoed, from what I hear, 24 hours a day, it would have been in the news. And of course, you know, Julio, a lot of people think, he went in there to steal documents to cover things up. The only thing he had his hands on were copies of documents, and most
right.
of them.
So the reports that he made.
Yeah, and so you know,
and the report and the documents were about how they uncovered a plot to do terrorism. So what would be the purpose of him wanting to hide that? So they don't know how good of a job he did.
It's just another example of how good this. This Republican attack machine really is, and they're good. I mean, they.
Oh no, for sure. Well, I have two questions for Republicans or the president or whoever, and one comment. Number one, why is it that there are mercenaries that are getting paid with U.S. dollars, and they're getting paid more than our American soldiers over there in Iraq? And the other question is, One of the conclusions that the 9/11 Commission came out with is that we need someone to oversee all the intelligence and to, you know, to be able to put everything together, you know, to connect the dots. And I'd like to ask, what exactly is Condoleezza Rice's job?
And let me...
We need someone to do that.
Yeah, let me add another question on with yours. Where has Condoleezza Rice been lately?
Oh, yeah, you know.
You know, ever since she testified in front of that 9/11 commission, and I don't know for what reason, but she's been, you know, come up missing.
Oh, and you know what? Now that you say that, like, I was listening to the Ed Schultz show this week, and he had, they did this thing where they were playing comments, the Condoleezza Rice was, her testimony when she was testifying in front of the 9/11 commission, and then they had Scott McClellan briefing reporters about, you know, the 9/11 report, and he was playing their speeches, if you want to call it that, side by side, and they said exactly the same thing verbatim, guys, verbatim, the exact same thing, and it was freaky. I was like, this is a joke, right? Like, he's just playing with the audio, but no, they were saying, I mean, verbatim, the exact same thing. And then the other conclusion they came out with is that there were intelligence problems, right? Well, I agree with them. The only problem is that they're a little off on where our intelligence problems are. Our intelligence problems have to do not with the CIA and the FBI, but with the president and his administration. Because what we keep hearing is that, yeah, you know, mistakes have been made, and, you know, but nothing ever goes perfect. And they keep lowering the bar and lowering our standards. Like with Abu Ghraib, they said that, well, the torture we did wasn't as bad as what Saddam Hussein used to did. Well, where I come from, if you have to compare your actions to that of a despotic terrorist, okay, in order to justify what you are doing, then you're in a bad place.
Oh, okay. You betcha.
And if you're and while he's trying to figure out if a memo titled "Bin Laden Determined to Attack the U.S." is historical or if they're kidding or if they're serious, and while they're trying to figure out if there are actually weapons of mass destruction in Iraq or if there's a link to Al Qaeda, there's 4,600 people that are dead Americans. I'm not even including the Iraqi civilians. 3,700 in the World Trade Center, 900 more in Iraq. And why? All of it could have been avoided if the president and his administration would simply pay attention and do their job. Meanwhile, they're telling us that, well, you know, just mistakes are being made. The problem is that mistakes are being made and people are dying. And it's like, oh, you know, well, whatever. It's like you said, if one person dies, it's a tragedy. If, you know, a million people die, it's just a statistic.
Yeah, I think Joe Stalin said that originally, a variation of it, but I'm pretty sure that's who he came up with. Hey, thanks so much, Julio, for your call. I do appreciate
it.
He makes a lot of good points, as always. You know, pertaining to that debacle with Sandy Berger. First of all, Sandy, what were you thinking? You know, I'm going to say the same thing to you I said to Bill Clinton I didn't actually say it to him because he wasn't listening to what I had to say, but back when he got caught with his, no other way to put it, pants down. What was he thinking? And what was Sandy Berger thinking now? I mean, they know these attack dogs are out to get him. And Sandy knows, it has to know, as someone that's cleared for top secret information, he had to know that it wasn't right for him to take anything, nothing on paper out of there. But, you know, I can understand in a way. I mean, these were all copies. This wasn't anything that was going to be kept from anybody because he couldn't get his hand on the originals anyway. They were copies, most of it copies of his own writings. So they're making a great big huge deal out of it. And the thing is, the Republican attack machine has been in high gear all week long. Of course, all the talking points have come out. I saw a... Well, you know, you stop and think about it. The reporting was done this week by Chris Matthews and Joe Scarborough and Pat Buchanan and, of course, Ann Coulter and that Kellyanne Conway, a slew of right-wing columnists like Linda Chavez and Cal Thomas and all the radio hosts like Limbaugh and Hannity and Savage. They were all beating this to death about him stuffing stuff in their socks, things in his socks, and reporting it as fact. When, in fact, there is no facts to that. There's no basis, in fact, to that whatsoever. The man walked out of there with some notes in his briefcase. He has admitted that he did. It just kind of smells that it all came out this week. It just kind of smells. And, you know, they're not going to give up on this. I mean, they're not going to give up on it at all. Even Hannity said, what was it? He was saying, he made a big issue out of this, saying that Berger stuffed the things in his socks. So, of course, these are the same people. Limbaugh was doing the same thing. This is the guy that said that Berger better not go near that, what was it, Fort Marcy Park, where Vince Foster was killed, that he might suffer the same fate. They're blaming this, you know, just to show you how nutty these people are. And this is why I stay away from the fringes on both sides of the aisle. Here they are, some of them, Limbaugh in particular, saying that Clinton had something to do with it, with the Sandy Berger episode, that they don't want Kerry to get elected, and since Berger was an advisor to the an unpaid advisor to the Kerry campaign, that they wanted him to get in big trouble, so the Clintons turned him in. Isn't that a great story? I love it. Going to go to Diane up in North Fort Myers right now. Diane, welcome
to
the show.
Yeah, hi, Guy. A lot of this, though, you have to admit, falls on the Democrats' fault, too, because what you're saying here. I mean, it's John Kerry and John Edwards, they need to get busy and start bringing up these facts that, you know, there's nothing for the Bush guy to run on his own accord. They've got to keep coming out with things, because what else does that guy have?
Oh, Diane, didn't you hear?
What's that?
We're safer now.
Oh, no.
Yeah, we're much safer now.
This is why I called. I was listening to C-SPAN Thursday night, I believe it was, listening to Robert C. Byrd give his speech. I don't know if you heard it or not.
I didn't get to see that
one. It was right about 7 o'clock in the evening. Fantastic. He was pointing right at the cameras in the Senate, letting us know, as the American people, that the money to be awarded to go out and to pay all the bills for our homeland security here, well, that bill has been sitting on the shelf for over 30 days, collecting dust. And meanwhile, the Republicans refuse to sign it and let it go through while they're going on their 45-day vacation. He was trying to get them to sign it so that the money would be appropriated out to go out to all the communities and that need it, and the border patrol and all this. No. Now, because of the Republicans, it's still sitting on the shelf for another 45 days.
Yeah,
and it has nothing at all to do with the Democrats.
They got complete control of that situation, and they know it.
But I'm concerned because they're coming out with a new so-called Homeland Security czar or whatever. But you know, Guy, in this country, the greatest thing that keeps us safe and keeps us free is a manner of checks and balances. You've got to have checks and balances. Otherwise, you're going to have where it's like back in the old time days, back when they, in the 30s and that, when they had the mafia taking over everything and organized crime. If you don't have someone in opposition of each other and a left hand watching a right hand, you can be so easily overtaken. I mean, all this sounds good that the FBI, the CIA now share all their information, and now they're wanting to put us under one guy that'll be over all of it. But the thing is who's watching that guy, and who's going to make sure that that guy is representing us in an honest manner?
Well, and, you know, here we go. Then there'll be another oversight committee from the Congress to oversee him.
Government just keeps growing bigger and bigger and bigger. And on this 911 commission, I would like to know what they charged us in a way of a bill, because I thought it was perfectly a total waste. I've heard a lot of lies come out of it. You know, misinformation was put in it. They're also, like the guy from Huffman, he even pointed out stuff on the news that where they had put in that 911 commission book, and it wasn't true, you know, concerning Otta. But I never heard one thing where they looked into, what about the stock markets on the London, Hong Kong, and the Tokyo Stock Exchange 3 days before 9-1-1 happened? Why didn't they ever look into that in United Airlines and American Airlines sell-offs?
Well,
why was that never brought out?
You know, I was disappointed. I don't know that we found out anything new from this commission. I was looking at
it. It was all a joke.
Yeah, I haven't found a thing new. Maybe someone can let us know something
new. I have never seen such a president being pandered to by people on both parties, and I don't know why.
Yeah.
I don't know why yet. I've got my theories on it. But it's just my theories right now. But when you look into the history of the Bush family, you can't help but have theories.
Oh, yeah. They're a dark, shadowy bunch, that's for sure. Diane, thanks for your call. I appreciate it very much. We're going to pause for a break right now. You're listening to The Guy James Show, 1200 WPTK, Fort Myers, Florida. We'll be right back after these words.
A Democrat and proud of it, Guy James.
I don't remember ever not having allergies. Spring and fall were the worst. I was always a runny-nosed little kid. Because of my seasonal allergies and allergic asthma, I often couldn't play outside with my friends at recess. I wanted to play on the soccer team, but I was just too miserable to be outdoors. Growing up, I tried over-the-counter allergy medications, but they either didn't work for me or they made me so sleepy I felt out of it. I was starting to think I'd always have to suffer outdoors. But you know, I finally got smart. I saw an allergy specialist, and I got the right treatment program. I even became a nurse. And today I help kids with allergies, so they won't have to go through what I did. Get smart like I did. See your allergist or personal physician. My name is Melanie Schell, and this is my true story. Call 1-800-842-7777 for more information, or go to smartaboutallergies.com on the web. This has been a public service message from the American College of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology.
Have you ever heard the expression, you're not getting older, you're getting better? Well, when it comes to driving, that doesn't happen naturally, but it can happen with a little effort. Just ask 68-year-old H.R. Robinson.
Personally, I exercise 4 to 5 times every week. Anytime you exercise your body, you're exercising your mind as well. You feel more confident, not only in driving, but in all aspects of life.
For a free brochure, call 1-800-993-7222. A message from the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety.
Have you ever walked by a homeless person and asked yourself, what can one person really do to help? Well, in AmeriCorps, you can do a lot. You can take a year and really give back. More than 50,000 Americans are doing it this year, helping solve tough issues like hunger, illiteracy, or just helping people find a place to live. It's your world. It's your chance to make it better.
Call 800-942-2677 or go to AmeriCorps.org.
If knowledge is power, then Power Talk 1200 is your source for news and information, plus today's most powerful talk program. Now, Power Talk 1200 brings you the resources of ABC News at the top of every hour, plus the recognized name in business with the CNBC report throughout your workday at 30 minutes past the hour. ABC News and CNBC Business Report. Knowledge is power. Power Talk 1200, WPTK.
Now, back to the nation's number one Democratic talk show host, Guy James.
Back at you here with the Guy James Show. So glad to have you with us today. I do want you to know we're here till 6 o'clock Eastern Time, and you can call us at 888-602-7500, 7501, 7502, 03, and 04, and locally 479-5540. We'd love to always hear what you folks have to say. You know, somebody sent me an interesting article this week, and I've often issued this challenge out to my friends on the right, and I've never gotten a good answer to it. Never. Not once have I ever gotten a good answer. You know, it told on here of a guy being at a football party out in Oklahoma, and some liberal piped up and asked everybody, will you people name me one bill your party ever passed to help the working man of this country? And, you know, that's a question that I've asked many times in this program, and I've never gotten an answer. And so, you know, the Republicans in the crowd told the guy, well, yeah, what have you done? When he started to talk about the Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, Peace Corps, the unemployment insurance, welfare for the poor, and all civil rights things, student grant and loan programs, you know, the Fair Labor Standards Act that established a minimum wage. and instituted child labor laws, set up time and a half pay for 40-hour weeks. You know, this could go on forever and ever. FHA, HUD with his public housing, urban renewal. What else? Farm conservation subsidy, the GI Bill. And by the way, the Republicans fought against the GI Bill tooth and nails. And they were waiting so that when the GIs got back home, they'd have a bunch of unemployed people and they'd be able to hire cheap labor, see? And then, you know, for the people in the financial world, we had the FDIC and FSLIC and, you know, Securities and Exchange Commission and all this. And it goes on and on and on and on. So let me ask my Republican friends that question. What in the way of help to the working man has a Republican Congress ever done for the working man? I'd really like to know the answer to that question. Maybe you've got some ideas on it. We can call and discuss it. Maybe I'm all wrong. Maybe I'm totally unaware of a plethora of bills that the Republicans have passed, giving benefits and helping the working man, just plain and simple. The good old working man, the guy that built this country with his, the sweat on his brow and back-breaking labor. Doesn't have to be back-breaking, but labor nonetheless. I'd just like to know, what have they done? I really would. I just never hear the answer to that question. So you can call us with the answer to that question if you're on the right. 888-602-7500, 7501, 7502, 03, and 04. An interesting bit of information came up this week. You know, we talked about the Republicans floated the idea that now the Russians must think that Bush was okay with going into Iraq because they were going to send in, what was it, 40,000 or 4, I forget how many, several thousand troops. They were going to send, the Russians were going to help us out and send troops in. Now the Russians this week reinstated its refusal to become involved in that messy conflict. Russians Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said Moscow had no intention of becoming involved. He said there are no such plans. And Foreign Ministry spokesman Alexander, I hate these Russian names, trying to pronounce them, Yakovenko said this week that Russia continued to believe that the U.S. invasion of Iraq was a mistake and that no possible incentive to persuade the Kremlin to send soldiers in was going to work. So there you have it. The Bushes were floating that out that, gee whiz, see, now even the Russians think that we did the right thing, but now the Russians come out and say, wait a minute, we never said that at all. Never said that at all. And taking a look at the news this week, a lot of things happening in the political scene. Of course, we got the convention coming up, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on that, too. I know many of our local Democrats, of course, we're sending people to the I know people who are going to the convention. Nearly went myself, but decided Radio Row up there was a little too big and decided not to get involved in it. But what do you think about a convention? Is it something we need to bother with anymore? Both sides, do they have a real reason other than getting a little FaceTime on TV now since the platforms are already decided ahead of time and the candidates are decided ahead of time? Is there any real reason to have a convention anymore? I'd like to know what you have to say about that. I know how I feel about it. I'd say, what the heck? I give it up. I can't see a big reason. Now, I suppose some good Democrat's going to call me and say, are you nuts? We've got to have our convention because, you know, I'd like to hear that. Let's see. We're going to go to Harry up in New York. Harry, welcome to the show. Have we got Harry with us? Well, I'm pushing buttons, and Harry isn't there. All right. Now, here we are. Are you with us, Harry?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. What do you got to say, my friend?
Well, you asked if I had learned anything from the 9/11 Commission, and I did learn one thing.
What's that?
Ashcroft lied on under oath.
Explain what you mean.
Well, if you remember, the whole story between him and Picard? What the heck, is that his name? That testified. Basically, the Daily Misleader came out and said in their final report released yesterday, the bipartisan 9/11 Commission concluded that Ashcroft's public testimony was false and misleading. The commission bluntly stated that Ashcroft's public testimony did not, and this is a quote, fairly or accurately reflect the significance of the 1995 documents and the relevance to the 2001 discussions. So that's what I learned.
Wow.
Our Attorney General cannot be trusted.
Well, now let me ask you something, Harry. This is an important question.
Mm-hmm.
Did you trust him before that?
Oh, no.
So how new was this? This wasn't any big revelation to you that you all of a sudden couldn't trust this Mr. Attorney General.
Well, when this came up, I think a lot of us, especially on the Democratic side, knew that what he was saying wasn't true. But I'm wondering if someone's actually going to do anything about it. Because I think it would mean that he misled under oath.
Nah, they're not going to do anything about it. They're just not going to. They're just plain not going to do anything about it. They control everything. All the rules in their favor right now. They've got all the votes, and they don't need to pay attention to what we have to say. Hey, I got to run, Harry, for news at the top of the hour. Thank you for calling, and glad to hear your perspective on that 9/11 commission. You're listening to The Guy James Show, WPTK Power Talk 1200, Fort Myers, Florida.
The Guy James Show.
Top of the hour, and the news is next. This is WPTK Pine Island Center, the station for Power Talk. Power Talk 1200.
Anguish in Utah. I'm Joan Bennett. Searchers with dogs have converged on a municipal landfill in Salt Lake City as police continue questioning members of Lori Hacking's family. Hacking, who was reportedly 5 weeks pregnant, disappeared last Monday. Her father, Eraldo Suarez, still hoping for the best.
She's up there. And I know everything's okay with her. And I need you guys to finally help us back. Bring her back to us.
Hacking's 28-year-old husband, Mark, who's been called a person of interest in the case, has been in a psychiatric hospital since he was found running naked near a motel not far from his apartment early Tuesday morning. Race for the White House seems to have slipped into a lower gear just ahead of the Democratic National Convention. ABC's Barbara Britt says the two candidates hit the airwaves today.
President Bush says many of the recommendations of the final 9/11 Commission report have already been put in place.
On the home front, we have dismantled terrorist cells and prosecuted terrorist supporters from California to Florida to Massachusetts.
While Senator John Kerry is campaigning his way back to Massachusetts.
This campaign is about listening and learning from Americans who believe in their hearts that tomorrow can be better than today.
In Boston, Kerry will accept the Democratic nomination for president. Barbara Britt, ABC News, Washington.
Iraq's interim prime minister, Iyad Alawi, is asking Egypt to stand up to terrorists after one of its diplomats was kidnapped. Militants released a video saying they nabbed the diplomat to discourage Egypt from sending security experts to Iraq. ABC's Mike Lee in Baghdad.
The Iraqis are quite keen to try to get American forces away from the UN and are being identified with them because many Iraqi officials believe that that's one of the key reasons these attacks are taking place.
A group claiming to be the European wing of Al-Qaeda says on its website Australia and Italy will be attacked if they don't pull their troops out of Iraq. This is ABC News.
If you spend up to one-third of your life in bed, shouldn't you make it as comfortable as possible? Yet most people spend night after night tossing and turning. But what if you could toss and turn less and sleep better, guaranteed? You can with Tempur-Pedic Swedish mattress. Call for a free sample at 1-800-942-1122 and feel this amazing material for yourself. The Tempur-Pedic bed reduces the pressure points that can make you toss and turn. You're guaranteed to sleep more soundly, wake up more energized. Even if you have back or neck problems, Tempur-Pedic offers unprecedented relief. That's why over 25,000 medical professionals worldwide recommend it to their patients. But you should feel it for yourself. Call 1-800-942-1122 for a free sample of the Tempur material plus a free better sleep video. You spend up to a third of your life in bed. Get the best rest you can. Call Tempur-Pedic now. 1-800-942-1122. That's 1-800-942-1122.
Thanks to overwhelming demand, the greatest Comcast high-speed internet sale of the year has been extended. For a limited time, you can still save over $200 when you get Comcast high-speed internet for just $19.99 per month until 2005, including free installation. Call 1-800-COMCAST now to get high-powered, super-fast Comcast high-speed internet service for less than the cost of dial-up until next year. Stop waiting for websites to come up and files to download. Comcast high-speed internet is faster than dial-up, faster than DSL, and requires no contracts. Call today and get our best deal ever. Comcast high-speed internet for just $19.99 per month until 2005. Call 1-800-COMCAST now. Service must be installed by July 21st to qualify for this great offer. That's 1-800-COMCAST. Call now. Offer available to new Comcast high-speed internet customers only. Availability of free installation is limited. Some restrictions apply.
Guy James, proud American patriot and host of America's number one Democratic talk show, brings his bold brand of liberal talk radio to Southwest Florida. Now, here's Guy James.
I invite you to join me every Saturday for a look at the way it really is. You've already heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth.
Guy James, every Saturday, 3 to 6, right here on Power Talk 1200. It's the Guy James Show.
All right, your 4 years old son, ready for the big leagues. Put your padding on, buddy. There you go, helmet.
Silly head.
Okay, that's right, with thigh guards. Now don't forget your mouth guard. You don't want to be losing teeth in your first game. Well, they're baby teeth, but yeah, put it in.
But Daddy.
Don't let them worry you. They may be over 200 pounds and kind of mean looking, but you're ready for them. Just run through them. Here's the ball. Run!
Daddy?
Don't look at me. Run with it. Go, boy. Run!
But I could get hurt.
No pain, no gain. Now run!
You wouldn't treat your child like an adult. So why put them in adult seatbelts? If they're under 4'9", they need a booster seat.
Ah, you should have straight-armed them.
For more information, go to boosterseat.gov. This message brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Department of Transportation.
All over America, people are taking the national radon test. Have you? Answer true or false. Radon is a radioactive gas. True.
I didn't know that, no.
True or false. The Office of the Surgeon General recommends that all homes be tested for radon. True, your home should be tested. True or false, radon is the second leading cause of lung cancer. True.
I'm going to dial the number and call.
1-800-SOS-RADON.
Keep your family safe from radon. Call now.
1-800-SOS-RADON.
Fear is fear itself.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
Now the world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. And now, you've heard the right. All that's left is the truth. Guy James.
Thank you. Thank you very much for being with us this afternoon. Always glad to have all of our listeners along, both here in Southwest Florida and our listeners from all around the country, all around the world, as a matter of fact, on the Internet. Always a pleasure to have a vast audience. And, you know, as I've always said, our audience seems to be a little bit better, more well-informed than so many audiences. And I can tell by the calls that I get. I get some great calls from folks that give perspective to many of these stories that come up. And once in a while I'm sitting here and somebody will call in and say something, and I'll sit here and go, my goodness, you know, I never thought of it quite that way. And so I respect our audience, most of them anyway. Right now, we're going to have a guest with us that I think you're going to find absolutely fascinating. A gentleman that has, a plethora of experience in the areas of human rights violations and so forth, and human suffering in the Sudan, which is a huge story right now, as well it should be, and also in Iraq. And so I want to try and talk to him about both of these problems. And, of course, after we get a little bit out of the way here, you're invited to call in at 888-602-7500, 7501, 7502, 03, and 04. And I'm sure the doctor would entertain your thoughts on the problems we're going to talk about. But right now I'd like to introduce a distinguished gentleman, Dr. Jim Jennings. He's the founder and the head of a wonderful group called Conscience International. You can see their website, www.conscienceinternational.org. And if you're concerned about what goes on in the realm of human rights violations and human suffering in this world, you need to take a look at that website. Dr. Jennings, thank you so much for being with us today.
Good afternoon, Guy.
I could tell by our conversation that we had the other day that you probably are as enlightened on the subject of the Sudan as anybody I've talked to lately or read about, and it comes from having quite a bit of experience in that area, doesn't it?
Well, we had some experiences there that were not very pleasant altogether, being arrested by death squads in one occasion and having to run through a hail of gunfire with the soldiers trying to suppress a rebellion in Sudan on another occasion, and it's really quite an intractable problem that is not just in the news now, but if you look back, it's been in the news for the last 50 years, and it's been largely ignored. So I'm glad you're dealing with this issue.
Well, one of the things I'd like to get right off, I'm not sure that it matters, but I know the government is complicit in some of this problem. I know the rebels from the Darfur region caused problems. Where does the fault lie with this problem?
Well, most observers are very ready to blame the Khartoum government, and I also agree with that. I think that they are largely complicit in trying to Islamize the South when those people there are either Christians or animists holding on to their old religions. But large numbers of them have become Christians over the last 20 or 30 years. And the fighting has been going on consistently since 1955. They fought steadily from 1955 to 1972. They had an uneasy peace for about 12 years. And then there was a degree of autonomy for the South. But then the fighting broke out again in 1983 because the central government in Khartoum in the North was trying to again impose Islam on the South, and it was against their religion and their religious traditions. And then a radical Islamist coup took place in 1989 and brought the present strongman Omar al-Bashir to power, and he was backed by an Islamist leader, but then they fell out. The Islamist leader Hassan al-Tarabi was put in prison, and the rivalry between those two, he's now out of prison, is part of what has fed this recent onslaught in Darfur. That really started in February of 2003, and then the government had launched a ruthless counterinsurgency campaign in April of that year, and for a year and several months they've been using these irregular militias, the Janjaweed, against the villages in that area, have been systematically destroying villages, burning houses, looting the livestock, killing the men, raping the women, poisoning the wells. I mean, it's just dreadful. And I attended a meeting the other day with those several Sudanese and other international observers who had just returned from there, and they said in all their time in humanitarian work they had never seen anything as bad as this. The situation is dire.
Well, there's so much about the Sudan that I know a lot of people don't know. And, you know, for you folks that haven't studied up on it, I think the Sudan, well, I believe it's the largest country area-wise in Africa.
Yes, that's right.
And what it appears to me is that we've got a real culture clash here between the northern part of the Sudan being an Arab nation and the southern part belonging more or less to Africa. Am I wrong on that?
That's right. The culture is Central African, essentially, in the south. And in the north, it is Arab and Muslim, and it has a different kind of dialect, constitution of the way they think. And these are Sudanese, Egyptians, nomadic tribes. Some of them are even non-Arab in origin, the Nubians and Kordofan people. But in the south, it's mostly non-Arab. This is over 50% of the people are Nilotic and Sudanic people, Nubians, the Dinka tribe, and the three tribes that are really being attacked most systematically are the Fur, the Masalit, and the Zagawa in Darfur. And Darfur is a province of this huge country of Sudan, and this province itself has 6.5 million people. It's as big as Iraq or California, and this recent fighting has driven 1.5 million people away from their homes. 155 villages have been documented as having been burned by satellite photos, and about maybe a couple of 100,000 people have been able to move into Chad.
Now, is Chad in any condition to take care of these refugees?
Not at all, and they're hardly any better off there. And the sad thing about it is that there are only, and you wouldn't believe this maybe, but in spite of all the noise that's been made and all the attention that's been given to this crisis in Darfur, only 9 organizations, non-governmental organizations, are working there. And that's why Conscience International is getting ready to send a medical team. I'll be going there in the next few weeks, and we'll be treating medical needs plus food aid to the people. But of those 9 organizations that are working there now, they are telling me that only they have 19% of the funds that they need to feed the people. In other words, they're woefully underfunded. So it's a pretty sad situation.
Well, the sad thing about it is, and I don't know the figures. I know you probably do, but on the broad scale of things, we're not looking at a lot of money, are we?
Not at all. It's not a problem of money so much. Although you need the money to do it, and so they are short of money. But logistics and the vast scope of the territory, and then how do you provide security without a military invasion? And of course, now Great Britain is talking about sending troops. The African Union has sent; they're sending 400. The United States has 2,000 troops on reserve. And we had a long talk among the humanitarian aid organizations the other day about whether it was wise to either A, call this a genocide in truth, which the UN has not yet done, or secondly, to advocate military intervention because the situation is so urgent. But the reality is that the military planners who have looked at it say, well, it would take 15 to 20,000 soldiers well equipped to go in there and to stabilize the situation and secure the Darfur province alone. You can imagine the size of California. And nobody in the world is talking about sending 20,000 soldiers there. First, it's too expensive. There's no financial return for it. And the American soldiers are stretched too thin already.
How weak is the African Union? For folks that don't know, the Sudan has a lot of neighbors. They've got Chad, they've got the Congo, Ethiopia, Kenya, Libya, Egypt, Uganda, and most of those folks I mentioned, not all of them, but most of them, Eritrea, most of them are involved in the African Union. Is that organization that powerless that they're not willing to step in or able to step in and help?
They are not very strong, and as you can imagine, any coalition of countries is only as strong as the weakest link, and those who disagree will create a tendency for the whole organization not to function. But they have taken some positive statements, and I think the other thing that came out of the meeting with the non-governmental organizations this past week is that, in fact, it's better if the African Union, if there has been intervention, if they intervene rather than a Western power, because it just compounds the problem. People resent it, especially after the Iraq war or the Iraq invasion. And so I think it's important that the African Union function, but I don't have any illusions that they're going to be able to be very effective in the long run there.
Well, I think I read where I believe, I hope I have it right, either Uganda or Kenya was going to send some people in. but said they didn't have the airplanes to fly people in. I thought, my God, is that all that's holding it up?
Right. It's a very difficult problem logistically and then also financially. And politically, it's very sensitive as well. If you can imagine, if they need 20,000 soldiers to stabilize the situation, then if the U.S. would send 2,000 soldiers, I'm sure it would be all over our television for a week or so, and it would make people feel good, but it really wouldn't do anything very effective for on the ground. So the question of how to actually function in the middle of this is really a puzzling one.
So, in other words, if there were 20,000 troops there, we may run into the same problem. Let's say if America sent some people in, we might run into the same problem that we have in Iraq, a vast territory with not nearly enough people to cover it.
Exactly. And I think it would eventually, if not right away, stir a lot of resentments because the whole thing that the Khartoum government has been advocating since 1989 and before is that radical Islam is the solution. And certainly it hasn't been the solution in any country we've seen. And if you look at a country like Sudan, with 30 million people now, only 4 million people among those have electricity. So the rest are basically locked into a medieval, pre-modern lifestyle. And when you drive through the country and you see that, it's just amazing.
Well, how modern, Khartoum, for example, how modern a city is it?
Well, it's a really interesting phenomenon because if you're used to seeing a city with skyscrapers, this is the opposite. It has, everything is just very low-lying, and the whole landscape is like a mud brick town, one or two stories just scattered across the landscape as far as you can see. There's a cluster of towns in Khartoum and Khartoum North and across the river Omdurman, and this is where the Mahdi, who led the rebellion in the 1880s against the British, came from, and they still have, you know, his shrine there. But that cluster of cities is between 10 and 12 million people there, and many of them are shanty towns around live in shanty towns around the outside, what the French call bidonville. And it's not much of a life for those people as well. And the economy of Sudan, it has enormous agricultural resources and it has some mineral resources, most notably oil. They've been pumping oil. They've been buying weapons with their oil. They're getting international debt from World Bank, I suppose, and other entities. And the public debt in Sudan is 95% of the gross national product, if you can imagine.
Wow, that's dreadful. I wanted to ask you, Al-Bashir now, is he, you mentioned there were going to be, what, 8 or 9 organizations going in, relief organizations go in and try and help?
They're already there in Chad, and some are actually in Darfur, but not many, one or two.
Well, is Al-Bashir cooperating with these efforts?
Yes, if you go to Khartoum, and I found that the Khartoum authorities are, the government people are, intelligent and fairly reasonable, but they're locked into an ideology of extremism. And it's a funny story. When I was riding in a boat where the Blue Nile and the White Nile meet together in Khartoum, the young man who was our boatman, I said to him, "Well, now in Sudan, it's not common that they just kill Westerners walking on the street as they do in Algeria. Do they do that here?" And he said, "Oh, no, in Algeria, they're in the opposition. Here, they are the government."
Oh.
I said, "Well, that makes me feel
Oh, that's
better.
Comforting.
So, but no, I think that it's a mixed bag because what they told Kofi Annan and Colin Powell is that, we're not really in control of these militias and we didn't do it, which is not true because Human Rights Watch has produced 4 documents that they have obtained which prove that they actually did direct this attack against these two armies in the south.
I hear there are many, many reports that the Janjaweed is being supported almost totally by the government.
Well, some of them, first of all, they're backed by the Army, and now some of them are beginning to wear Army uniforms. And what the anecdotal reports are that come from the villages, and if you read these things, it's horrifying. Pregnant women have their stomachs slit and the baby taken out and killed. Some women had their children throat cut in front of them, and then the women are usually raped. Some of the men are tied up in bundles and thrown into the fire. I mean, it goes on and on. These are reports of the victims. And then they say that usually planes will come in and bomb the village, and then the horsemen, the Janjaweed, will come in and mop up and kill and take slaves. Now, slavery has been reintroduced into Sudan the last 20 years after the Islamic coup in particular, because the Sharia law, which is the medieval Muslim law, allows slavery. And so if they stand for the Sharia, they couldn't very well say you can't have slaves. So the slavery was, after being wiped out in the 19th century, was reintroduced in the late 20th and still exists in the 21st century. And it's hard to imagine. You like to think that humanity is making progress, but they say there may be up to 200,000 slaves in Sudan right now.
And where do they, in the Sudan?
Yes.
So they're not taking them out of the country and selling them?
No, I don't think so. There are in West Africa some local traditions of slavery, and people have to sort of buy their independence out of it by working for 7 years or something like that. But these are employed in Sudan.
You know, Doctor, it's really distressing when you stop and think the wonderful technological advances we have in this world and all the things we're afforded in a country like the United States and the progress we've seen. To hear a gentleman such as yourself talk about actual slavery still taking place on this planet of ours, it's incredible. I wanted to ask you about Kofi Annan and Colin Powell. It seems that both of them are somewhat hesitant to call this genocide. What do you think?
Well, you go back to, first of all, you look in the dictionary definition, and then you go back to the 1948 UN Protocol on Genocide, which was signed by most every nation, and one of the reasons I think they may not be calling it a genocide is because even the U.S. Law kicks in where if there is a genocide, we have to act. And so they're holding back on that. But I'm very disappointed that Kofi Annan said, well, this is a humanitarian catastrophe and it's a crisis, but he wouldn't call it a genocide yet. And even some of the NGOs, non-governmental organizations, are hesitant to call it a genocide because if they do, then the government of Sudan will not allow them in. But if you read that the protocol, and if you think about what genocide really means, it means doing harm to the members of a group deliberately, and that harm can be in any number of ways, like killing, maiming, torturing, moving from one place to another, kidnapping, moving without their permission, ethnic cleansing, driving them out, denying them health care services, food, and so forth, causing the population to, the future children not to be born or the population to be moved to another area. Those are kinds of things that are specified as harm. All these have been done, of course, in Darfur. Now, where it comes down to a dictionary definition, it must be systematic and deliberate and intentional in order for it to be genocide. And I think both these conditions are met. It is obviously systematic, and obviously it's intentional, or they wouldn't be doing it, and they have targeted these three ethnic groups, the Fur, Masalit, and Zagawa. And so therefore, it's bona fide, certified genocide. And so now, why don't the international organizations like the UN, and why doesn't the U.S. declare it so and then do something about it, whatever they have to do? I'm not advocating intervention. It's very tempting to say the military can solve all our problems. We found out in Afghanistan and Iraq that is not true. And sometimes it just creates more problems for the people. So there have to be other solutions.
Well, what does President al-Bashir, you know, is he willing to cooperate with the United Nations, with outside countries coming in and helping this situation, or is he trying to purposely keep people out so that, you know, you mentioned that the Janjaweed, the people, you know, the government's involved with them. Is he a man we can trust here?
Well, al-Bashir says that he will cooperate, but the extent of it is yet to be tested. I don't think many people really trust either him or any of his apparatus to either tell the truth or be open about things. So I think they will. It's sort of inbred in their way of thinking to try to pull the wool over the eyes of international organizations, Kofi Annan and Colin Powell. And even while they were down there looking at some of the places, they wouldn't show them the villages that had been destroyed or the refugee camps, and so they emptied a couple of camps before they got there in order to say, well, we don't have any people like this. So no, they're playing tricks. And how that could go is really hard to how that could continue is really hard to figure.
Doctor, if you can stay with us, we're going to pause for a message right now and let all of our listeners know. We'll be right back after these words. You're listening to the Guy James Show with our guest right now, Dr. Jim Jennings, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes right after these words.
Restoring the liberal media, the Guy James Show.
Hello?
Hi, Bill? This is George Dewey from up the street.
Oh, hey, George. How you doing?
Good, good. Say, I noticed you've been walking to work these days instead of driving, and I don't quite know how to say this, but...
But what?
But your butt. Your buttocks. Your butt. I think I found your butt on my front lawn. Have you recently lost it?
As a matter of fact, I have, George. It's about time someone noticed.
Well, it was kind of hard to miss, if you know what I mean. Anyways, would you like it back?
Would I like it back? No, not really.
So it's okay if I throw it out?
Sure, that's fine. Take it easy, George.
Small step number 8. Walk instead of driving whenever you can. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
I'm a singer and a voice coach. At 28, I was diagnosed with multiple myeloma, a kind of cancer. I pictured my 2-year-old growing up without me, and I decided to fight and win. I got help from the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. Thanks to their life-saving research, survival rates are improving dramatically. I'm now cancer-free, and there's a new song in my heart. To help, call 888-HELP-LLS or visit lls.org. I'm Bryn Jones, and with the help of the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, I'm relentless for a cure.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared. It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest.
I feel like I'm choking.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
You know how to react to their asthma attacks. Here's how to prevent them. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. Visit www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council.
This is Fight Back, Talk Back, the program that asks the question, do you have a con? Do you have a scam? Do you have a ripoff? Are you troubled by something? Do you need help on a consumer problem? And we have an open line. All you have to do is run your finger across the pad, and through the miracle of radio, you will be here in our studio talking to us.
Join David Horowitz and Fight Back Sunday, 7 to 9 p.m., right here on WPTK Power Talk 1200. You've heard the right. Now all that's left is the truth. Guy James.
Yes, I'm back with you on the Guy James Show. Right now we've got Dr. Jim Jennings of Conscience International Organization with us. He's the founder of that organization. And, you know, it's hard to believe, and I know many of you have asked to find out all we can about the Sudanese situation. But it's hard to believe in this era in which we live that there's this kind of human suffering going on and we can't do anything about it. And, you know, I think sometimes we tend to simplify things and think there's a simple answer to it. But as Dr. Jennings has been telling us, there's some complexities to this situation that present terrible problems. Dr. Jennings, where do we start with this?
I think we start by recognizing our own situation in a way. The United States is a third on the Human Development Index in the world. And out of 174 nations, we rank right up there. I guess you could say that as powerful as our economy is, why aren't we at the top? And I think probably the answer is excessive militarism is costing us money that we could put into social programs. But that said, Sudan is 142nd on the list of Human Development Index list of 174 nations. So it's pretty low, whereas Iraq is about 125 on the list. And Afghanistan is, again, one of the lowest. If we recognize the comparisons here, and I think that the income of an average person in Sudan in 1 year is $290, which is about 0.9%, not quite 1% of what the USA person would get. If we see that disparity, we ask the question, if all men are created equal, if we really believe our founding documents, why shouldn't that there be a more equitable situation in various places in the world? One thing we know, there's enough food in the world to feed everybody comfortably. And, for example, if the countries of the world, instead of buying weapons, like Iraq was buying weapons with its oil money, if it, instead of doing that, would share the wealth with the people in the country, everybody would be rich.
Well, I imagine we throw away as much food as might be needed to alleviate the situation here in this country every day. I'm sure we probably do.
No question about that.
Doctor, you know, we've heard over and over and over again that, we're not going to do anything in Sudan because there's no oil there. But as I take it, they're pumping somewhere in the neighborhood of 250,000 to 300,000 barrels of oil nowadays. That's no insignificant amount. Are there vast reserves there that the outside world wants to get their hands on?
Well, there are on the Horn of Africa, and when the Somali situation occurred and the U.S. was there and then had to leave, that was part of the thinking, I think, of the Pentagon, especially also the Horn of Africa is one of the choke points for shipping in the whole world, along with Singapore and the Panama Canal. There, if you want to control the world militarily, you'll need to control those choke points for shipping. And so there was much more to it. Some people thought back in the 90s when the Sudan situation was going on or the Somalia situation was going on. And Sudan is a part of that. Now, if they had up-to-date technology and good shipping facilities, they could obviously pump a lot more oil. So, but I think the problem is, again, that the government in most of these countries takes that money, uses it for their own use and for weapons, and they don't use it for the people.
Sure. You wonder how many more centuries it's going to be until we have people civilized enough to know in every country in the world that we need to take care of the people there. It just appears that the government there has failed its people, and it's a terrible, terrible mess. And before I so rudely interrupted you talking about this, I was wanting to find out from you where do we, you know, like last night, I think there was a House resolution passed here in this country last night in the Congress making this calling this a genocide. I don't know whether that's going to have anything to do with how our government goes into this or not. Are you aware of the House resolution that was passed?
I knew that some members who are very courageous, Sheila Jackson Lee is one of them, she made a marvelous speech the other day on the floor of the House on this issue. It was very stirring. And so there are many others who have done the same thing. Some even have been willing to be arrested and go to jail in protesting Sudan's government. I think that, yes, it'll probably pass, and once it passes, it will trigger a necessity for the U.S. to act to do something.
Well, I certainly hope so. You know, you see human suffering on a massive scale like this, you can't help but feel for the people. I don't care whether they're our culture or some other culture; it doesn't matter. We're all breathing the same air on this planet, and it's just too darn bad that we can't all have at least a modicum of safety and welfare for all the people to live a decent life on this planet. I wonder how many more years it'll be until we are called the world truly a civilized place. And until that happens, I don't think we are fully civilized.
Well, I'm glad that in 2004 that there's a lot of attention being paid to this. But realize, please, that since 1983, in Sudan alone, there have been 2 million deaths from war, genocide, and famine. There have been periodic famines, which have been very devastating. It's estimated that 30,000 people have been killed in the present conflict, and that there will be another 350,000 die from starvation and war in the next year if something isn't done. So, you know, it's too late in a way, but it's still not too late if we act.
Well, how can we, as civilized people, raise the consciousness of people in our country and other civilized countries to pay attention to this and do the right thing?
Well, in the book of Genesis, it says that Cain asked God, "Am I my brother's keeper?" After he had killed him, and some wise men have said that the rest of human history is the answer to that question. Am I really my brother's keeper and my sister's keeper? And the answer is, if you think about it, that we're all in this together. And what you're saying is right on target. We need to have a greater awareness. And then organizations like mine and the media need to do some advocacy to ask whether this is a genocide. If it is, to be forceful in making public statements, and then we have to figure out ways to deal with Sudan, with the government there, with the security problems, with the logistics, the rains that are coming, the size of the area is so vast, the transport is almost non-existent, and to how to deal with this kind of issue.
Well, I was encouraged when I saw this House vote passed. I think it was, in fact, the information I have is passed 422 to nothing that they're going to call this a genocide right now. So I hope at least we Americans can get together on this issue. If you don't mind, Doctor, I'd like to switch gears a little bit and move a little bit northeast on the map, on the world map right now. And I know that you are also an expert on the situation in Iraq as well, at the human suffering that's taken place over there over many, many years. I know you have a great deal of experience in that area. How bad was it? You know, I'll start off by asking this. I spoke to you a little bit on the phone the other day about the mass graves and the genocide and so forth that took place in Iraq. The mass grave situation is coming up now and being questioned. What do you know about that?
Well, I was in Iraq for many years, starting 40 years ago, and have made maybe 30 trips there in the last few years, doing a lot of work in the hospitals. But I started out in Middle Eastern history in archaeology in Egypt and Palestine, and in many of the other countries. So one of my avocations is going out and walking over the territory. I walked over a lot of the areas where these mass graves are supposed to be and where they are. And in fact, if you go to Najaf, you can drive for 20 miles around the city, and there aren't 300,000 there. There are probably millions of graves. These are people who have been burying there for 1,000 years because that's a holy city. So when you talk about mass graves in Iraq, it's like talking about mass graves in Egypt. They've been burying people there for many, many years. What's wrong with the claim that there are 300,000 mass graves? And this is a claim that Tony Blair has made, that President Bush has made, and others in the administration. The fact is that that's fantasy, that's spun out of whole cloth. No such thing has happened. There were probably 1 million people killed in the Iran-Iraq war on both sides. That was a war. It was not a genocide. It was not a systematic slaughter of people. There were, in my estimation, about 30,000 people killed in the Shiite rebellion in the south and the Kurdish rebellion in the north in 1991 after George Bush Sr. Advocated that the people rise up against Saddam Hussein, and then he didn't do a single thing to aid them and let them be slaughtered. So whatever the number was, it wasn't 300,000. When anybody gives you a round number, you can say that's very inexact. But that was used for propaganda purposes. I talked to one of the U.S. colonels whose job it was to investigate the mass graves. And what he told me was the following. I said, were any of those graves created after 1991? The answer was no.
Interesting. Very interesting.
And these were killed in the context of a rebellion. I don't say that it was a nice thing to do. It was merciless. It was brutal. It was bloody. They executed people that they rounded up. That's a human rights violation of the first magnitude, as was the Anfal campaign against the Kurds in the north. The worst thing Saddam Hussein ever did was the Al-Anfal campaign, destroying villages, maybe 400 of them, in the north of Iraq and along the border with Iran, as a retaliation against the Kurds and to prevent them from fighting him. But in every one of those cases, except those exterminations, which he conducted, they were in the context of wars.
I'd like to ask your opinion on these sanctions that took place. Many people realize that the sanctions, while definitely weakening Saddam Hussein in some ways, maybe not definitely, but was aimed towards him, that they had horrible repercussions on the people of Iraq and the women and children of Iraq. What is your opinion of that?
Well, I was opposed to the sanctions many years put on Iraq, and I spoke out on television, on CNN, on Fox, many, many times, and PBS and NBC before the war, that these sanctions were immoral. They were killing the innocents, women, children, and the aged. They were not harming Saddam, but making him stronger. And they had no function except, and they're unworthy of a great nation, except just petty and mean to try to retaliate against Saddam, where we'd had a war in 1991. Those sanctions went on for 12 years. And they killed hundreds of thousands of children. I was in the hospitals and saw them dying like flies for years there in every ward of every hospital in every Iraqi city. And so if you want to know why the insurgency is continuing in Iraq with such vehemence against the Americans, you don't have to just look at the invasion and the new government, that the puppet government that the Americans have put in place. Look back at the previous 12 years and say, if you were an Iraqi and you had been starved and your children had been forced to die because of the U.S. and U.K. sanctions on the country, would you think that the Americans were your friends and trying to help you, or would you think that they should be your enemies? And I think the sanctions explain the depth and the bitterness of the insurgency. You had to live through that period of time in order to know how the Iraqis feel. And I lived through it in part, and I know how they feel. And I tried to warn the media, through the media and the government about this beforehand, because it was a very foolish thing to invade a country or even to put the sanctions on and then invade the country following the sanctions.
Well, Doctor, you know, we've been force-fed the story for, 2 years now or more, that they hate us because we're free. I find that to be a ridiculous argument. I don't think they hate us because we're free, do they?
Well, I heard George McGovern last night on Fox and this morning on Fox. He's peddling his book, but he's a wise man, I believe, and a very sensible and humane one. And he said it's not true that they hate us because we're free. That they hate us because of our actions that are making their lives miserable, and when that changes, you'll have a different thing. You know, I speak Arabic. I've been almost 45 years in the Middle East now, and working in all those countries. Really, they're the greatest people, the nicest people in the world, the most humane. You can really deal with those people. What Americans have a distorted view is that there is 0.1% of the population that are the radical Muslim fanatics, and those people do have hatred, and they have hatred because they are weak and the West is strong. They hate secularism, but it's not that they hate us because we're free. There are real issues, and if you read the 9/11 committee report, they said one simple reason why the September 11th tragedy happened. We've had all these commissions and all these explanations as to why September 11th happened. No, I mean, as to what happened, but nobody ever asks why, because I think they don't want to know why. But why is written in the September 11th commission report, and it says the following. That the Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was the architect and the mastermind and the operational chief of the attack on New York and the Pentagon on September the 11th. He did it, the September 11th Commission report says, he did it because of the U.S. policy in support of Israel for 50 years, has made the lives of Palestinians miserable, has killed many thousands of them, and has been very unjust, and for that reason he tried to retaliate. So if you take that, then you ought to say that America should look at its foreign policy in the Middle East.
Well, Doctor, you know as well as I do that that's some difficult turf to cross that you're talking about now. For immediately, anybody hearing you and I talk about now that the part of the problem is our relationship with Israel, you're branded anti-Semitic in this country for even bringing it up.
Well, I'm just quoting the 9/11 Commission, and the head of that commission, or the executive director, is Jewish, and he is also pro-Israel Zionist, and yet he allowed that portion to be inserted in the 9/11 Commission. So I think that anybody who is upset about that should not take it up with me, but should take it up with the 9/11 Commission.
Yes, yes, indeed. So, Doctor, you're going back to the Sudan or Iraq soon?
Well, both. I have my colleague just left yesterday on a mission in Iraq, and he will be not only delivering aid in Basra with the medical aid, but then he will be traveling to meet with the current Prime Minister, Iyad Alawi, the appointed Prime Minister. And one of my best friends is one of the associates of Mr. Alawi there. So we'll be going there now in this month, and then the next few weeks we'll be going to Sudan.
Well, you're considered an expert in that part of the world. Do you think, of course, we're saying, our government is saying we've given them democracy. Do you think their government can end up in any kind of any way, shape, or form a democracy like ours? Do you think that country can stay in one piece, or will they continue to go after each other like they have for so many hundred years?
Well, I taught Middle East history in several U.S. universities, and as I say, I've worked in those countries. But I don't think you should quote me on it. You should quote the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Defense, the President, the National Security Advisor, the Deputy Secretary of Defense, Mr. Wolfowitz, and they all have said, well, after the first few months of the Iraq experience, they've all said, well, it's really not going to be like our democracy. And so then all of a sudden they began to allocate not one man, one vote, but proportional representation according to sections of the country and who you were and what your religion was and all this. All of that is absolutely opposed to the American ideals and ideology. And all of these people going around and saying that we are conservatives and those of you who advocate a different solution in Iraq are liberals and are off base, they are just cockeyed, because the fact is that they are not conservatives. True conservatives, and I've been interviewed on Fox and debated with Sean Hannity and Oliver North many times, the true conservatives would not go and spend $250 billion on a useless and unprovoked war in the desert against a defenseless country. True conservatives would be fiscally responsible. True conservatives would not launch an aggressive war. True conservatives would not do all those things. I mean, certainly Robert Taft, Barry Goldwater, Pat Buchanan, those kind of people would not countenance such a thing. And so I think that it's really a false idea that these people are conservatives.
But it's going to end up being a democracy because we call it a democracy, no matter what form it happens to be. That's the way it looks to me.
But we need to really go back to our founding documents. And what does our Declaration of Independence, what does our Constitution say, and actually believe in that ideology rather than the ideology of might makes right? And we would see a different outcome because the people around the world would respect us. Because we believe in those real truths of our Constitution.
Doctor, we've got about 4.5 minutes left, and I want to put you on the spot here. I know a learned gentleman like yourself maybe doesn't like to predict the future, but where do you think, where do you see Iraq in 5 years from now, 10 years from now?
There is a concerted effort, and I've been pointing this out to the State Department people since 1991, or even 1990, before the war started in 91, that there are some people who would like to break Iraq into three parts. And it's making a little, it's like the prisoner who's sentenced to a chain gang, his job is to make little rocks out of big rocks. And the idea of the ancient Romans was divide et impera, which means divide and conquer, although it really means divide and rule. And if you divide up these countries into weaker ones, they will never threaten Israel again, for example, and they'll never threaten Saudi Arabia again, let's say, and therefore it would be better for them from the point of view of an imperial power in Washington that they be small countries rather than large countries. Now,
are you talking three divisions like the Kurds, the Shias, and the Sunnis?
Yes, but that would that would mean some ethnic cleansing to do it, and I'm not sure the U.S. is prepared for that yet. But some people are advocating it, and I would say that it's a real possibility in the next number of years. But the one thing I will predict, since I can't predict the outcome for sure, is that I will predict a civil war in Iraq continuing for 15 or 20 years. You know, the one in Lebanon went on for 15 years. I was in the middle of it. It was incredibly bloody and ugly, and it didn't end soon. And that's the way things go in the Middle East. They count time in generations and centuries and millennia rather than at the end of each quarter to show a profit as the American corporations do. So they think differently about it. And they'll be there for a long time fighting for what they consider their own turf and their own livelihood. So I wouldn't. Certainly, there will be a continuing conflict in Iraq, even if the U.S. pulled out tomorrow, since we started the war that put some responsibility on us. But honestly, I think that you will see in 15 or 20 years a different configuration of the lines, even though the U.S. says our goal, and the president announced this in one of his State of the Union messages, our goal for Iraq is that it be unified, independent, and free. Well, it's not going to be unified, it's not going to be independent, because it will be under somebody's thumb, either the U.S. or somebody else, and it's certainly not free right now because they're occupied.
Doctor, take the couple of minutes that we have left and talk about your organization.
Well,
promote it, if you will.
Thank you. We started in actually, 1982, in the siege of Beirut, taking aid to the beleaguered Palestinians surrounded by the Israeli army in Beirut. But we only started our actual incorporation in 1991, and then have been active in the wars in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Kurdistan, and the earthquakes in Turkey and India and Gujarat, India and Iran. We've been in Iran the last 6 months in three different missions with the great BAM earthquake that killed 41,000 people. We do medical aid mainly, surgery for children in Kabul. We feed refugees in Pakistan, and so it's a small organization, but we depend on volunteers, and we'd like to think that we're a link between needs that nobody else either knows about or not courageous enough to actually plunge in and do something about because it's dangerous, and needs and resources in this country and from other countries too. We've had many volunteers from India, Canada, Belgium, UK, and other places. So, but we do mainly medical work and some work with refugees. We don't do long-term development. We don't take any government money, and because we oppose the militarism of the U.S. Response in many of these cases.
ConscienceInternational.org, the founder and current director, am I correct about that?
Yes. Yeah. We're having now state directors in several states, okay. And the California director is the one that just left for Iraq.
Dr. Jennings, we have to pause for news at the top of the hour. I must tell you, I could spend a good long time talking to you. It's been a fascinating hour, a fast hour. Our listeners have learned a whole lot that I know they didn't know before in many respects. And I want to thank you for the work you do, and I want to thank you for being on our program. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Jim Jennings.
It's been enjoyable. Thank you.
Thank you. Fascinating man. Absolutely fascinating man. You're listening to the Guy James Show. We're going to stop for news at the top of the hour and change gears here a little bit. You stay close to your radio and don't go anywhere now. Again, you're listening to the Guy James Show, WPTK Power Talk 1200, Fort Myers, Florida.
A Democrat and proud of it, Guy James. Top of the hour, and the news is next. This is WPTK Pine Island Center, the station for Power Talk. Power Talk 1200.
Positive pitch from both presidential candidates heading into the Democratic convention. I'm Joan Bennett.
Our best days are ahead of us. If we make the choices that we can make, let's go out and get the job done together.
John Kerry in Sioux City, Iowa. ADC's Bob Schmidt traveling with the Kerry campaign.
You won't hear many direct attacks on President Bush by Senator Kerry on this pre-election campaign swing. Friday in Denver, then again here in Sioux City, Iowa, it was the introductory speakers at campaign rallies who slammed President Bush because he chose the National Guard during Vietnam. Theresa Hines Kerry, the senator's wife, told Iowans she has a husband who reads.
President Bush, in his Saturday radio address, talked about progress so far against terrorists.
On the home front, we have dismantled terrorist cells and prosecuted terrorist supporters from California to Florida to Massachusetts.
Mr. Bush said his administration will carefully weigh recommendations issued by the 9/11 Commission this week and says nothing in the report has been ruled out. Search for Lori Hacking intensified today in Salt Lake City. Police using dogs converged on a landfill. Hacking's husband, Mark, has been called a person of interest in the case. He's been confined to a psychiatric hospital since her disappearance Monday. Lori's father, Geraldo Suarez.
We have still not found Lori, and we need your help. And I beg you to come out and help us.
Missing woman was reportedly 5 weeks pregnant. Fat-free salad dressing, not necessarily the healthiest choice for dieters. Say, Iowa State University researchers, nutritionist Dr. Wendy White says you need a little fat in your dinner in order to absorb vital cancer-fighting nutrients.
In that context, we found much to our surprise that when we added fat-free salad dressing, there was virtually no absorption of beta-carotene or alpha-carotene or lycopene from the salad.
She says go with low fat. This is ABC News.
Are you falling behind with your bills? Are creditors and bill collectors calling and harassing you? Debtscape can help. Debtscape is a nonprofit credit counseling organization that helps individuals and families avoid bankruptcy and get caught up again. Call them at 1-800-330-3535. Debtscape's team of certified credit counselors have helped thousands of people manage their debt better. Even if you're not a homeowner, Debtscape can negotiate a new repayment schedule with your creditors. They may also be able to help reduce or even eliminate your high interest rates and consolidate your bills into just one monthly payment. Debtscape offers many solutions to help you get out of debt. So if you're over $2,000 in debt, let a Debtscape certified credit counselor help you. 1-800-330-3535. 330-3535 for a free debt consultation. Your call is completely confidential and there's no obligation. Call Debtscape now. 1-800-330-3535. Not available in all states. That's 1-800-330-3535.
Let's face it, mold, mildew, and fungus on your roof is not only unsightly, it's a potential health hazard. DuraShield, an evolution in roofing protection, restores the original beauty of your expensive concrete or tile roof and prevents mold, mildew, and fungus from returning. Guaranteed for 7 years. For asphalt or fiberglass roofing, DuraShield will reduce granule loss as well as prevent the regrowth of mold, mildew, and fungus and will extend the life of your roof. If you're considering having your roof cleaned, don't pressure wash and damage your roof. Call DuraShield for a free no-obligation inspection and estimate at 574-2594. A professional representative will show you why DuraShield has protected nearly 20,000 roofs in the past 11 years and why once you see the difference, you'll never waste your money on pressure washing again. Protect your property by calling DuraShield for a free estimate at 574-2594. Call 574-2594 today.
Some medications commonly prescribed to older adults can wreak havoc on our ability to drive. Except for alcohol, prescribed medication is responsible for more traffic crashes than any single illicit drug. So before you get behind the wheel, read the warning labels on all prescription and over-the-counter medications, and always check with your doctor or pharmacist when taking multiple medications.
For a free brochure on older driver safety, call 1-800-993-7222. A message from the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
Now the world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show. America's number one democratic talk show. And now, you've heard the right. All that's left is the truth. Guy James.
I don't want to hear any more pinko socialist garbage. It doesn't matter to me that the military is provided to me by the contributions of all taxpayers and defends me as it defends all. I don't care if the interstate highway was built in this manner as well, or law enforcement, or any other number of public institutions. I could care less about Social Security, even if I neglect to realize that it will be there for me whether I need it or not, hopefully. I'm tired of minorities whining. They have the same opportunities as everyone else. I don't want more educated minorities to have more opportunities. I don't care if they underwent or still undergo a variety of racial prejudices and injustices. That was in the past. Get over it. I'm tired of immigrants coming to this country and taking our jobs. I know a lot of hard-working American lettuce pickers. It doesn't bother me that our corporations are shipping our jobs to other countries for cheaper labor and to avoid labor regulations. I believe that our moral decay and almost all of today's problems can be traced back to one man, Bill Clinton. It doesn't matter to me if he was elected twice. It doesn't matter to me that 50% of our nation's marriages end up in divorce, a high percentage due to infidelity. It doesn't matter that almost all politicians lie to various degrees. They shouldn't be lying about their personal lives, like Clinton. Keep the lying in the realm of policy and issues, thank you very much. I will credit the Republican Congress and former Republican presidents for various achievements when it's convenient. The Democrats hold the blame for everything, especially Bill Clinton. I am a neocon, and I've forgotten what it means to be a true Republican. That, my ladies and gentlemen, friends, is the, that seems to be their problem right now. That's exactly the way they act, and I think many of our Republican friends have indeed forgotten what it's like to be a real Republican. A Jacob Javits, Nelson Rockefeller Republican, Dwight Eisenhower Republican. And as often I say this, this current White House gang of thieves is not your father's Republican Party.
It's no longer the party of Lincoln or Mark Twain or Jacob Javits or Nelson Rockefeller, Dwight Eisenhower, and Barry Goldwater. No, sir. This is a completely different animal, all right. What used to be the party of independent thinkers and political idealists has been purchased by big corporate America, TV preachers, and political used car salesmen like Tom DeLay and Rick Santorum. They're engaging in demagoguery on gay marriage, school prayer, and tax issues until we can't stand to listen to them anymore. They've advanced desperately stupid ideas like Reaganomics, which has put us into debt from now till the cows come home. Our children and grandchildren are going to wonder, what the hell were we thinking? On federal and state levels, they've succeeded in bankrupting government for their own greedy privatization schemes. And Democrats have always believed government is necessary for the good of all people. The Republicans used to believe the same thing, but they've undergone a wicked transformation which has left them selfish, arrogant, and greedy. They now have an attitude that in their minds allows them to rape and plunder this country and make an elite, wealthy, Republican-only gated community for themselves. They'll build their community high up on a hill away from the stench of chemical plants and slaughterhouses, and they'll send their sewage down the hill into the poor man's water supply and say, to hell with the poor. They deserve what they get. We've got ours. Let them get their own. That's the real Republican Party of today. Going to go to the phones. And by the way, you can call us 888-602-7500, 7501, 7502, 03 and 04. Locally, 479-5540. We got Bob in Cape Coral. Bob, welcome
to
the show.
Hey, good afternoon. Mr. Jennings, boy, he was very informative.
He is.
I enjoyed that.
Fascinating man.
I learned a lot there. I didn't know Sudan had oil, though. I knew pretty much about the ganja weed and what they were doing, but I didn't know anything about the oil there.
Yeah, it's down in the the mid-south region. You know, a lot of people don't realize that Sudan is a huge country. It's 1,500 miles from one end to the other, and about two-thirds of the way down between Khartoum and the southern border with Uganda, for example, that's where the oil is.
Well, see, that will help a little bit, maybe to get us involved over there. But I really give the House credit, though. 422, the zero, to call that genocide, that's great.
Yeah.
I really give them credit. Hey, Guy, did you hear this week about Rush Limbaugh reporting that they found nuclear weapons on missiles in Tikrit? Was that true? I heard that on some show. Was he really reporting that?
Well, I didn't hear that he reported that. I've heard that from several places this week. I also, now my Republican friends are going to hate me for this, but I also read that sources from, I'm sorry, I hate to do this. I always like to source everything. I can't remember where the source was, but talking about possibly planting them. So they look like we're finding them, you know. But, yeah, the supposedly, you're talking about the weapons they supposedly found in the trenches that had been buried and so forth, not far from Baghdad. That whole report turned out to be completely bogus, by the way.
Right, right. I know that. And that's the reason why I was asking if you heard that, because I was listening to Air America, and there was some nutty people calling in there and saying, what do you think now, huh? They found nuclear weapons. So they, like you said earlier, they just throw it out there. And the ones that aren't educated, it'll see if it will stick.
Oh, sure, it's going to stick. You know, how many times have you heard here in the last few weeks? Hey, look, Bob, put yourself in their position. You said you're going to have a war on account of weapons of mass destruction, and it didn't find any. And so you're going to cling to any little thing that comes up. Now they're saying, oh, yes, we found enough sarin gas to kill 500,000 people. It's not true. They're coming up with any little thing they can hang their hat on. It's desperation is what it is.
It is desperation. And you must know about John Dean's book.
Oh, yeah.
Calling the administration. Matter of fact, the name of the book is Worse Than the Nixon Administration.
Yeah.
The most secretive. I mean, that coming from John Dean, to me, is just... amazing, because you know the man was just involved right there in the Watergate.
We had John Dean as a guest on our program some months back, and he presented the point that this was going to be a drip, drip, drip type thing against this administration, and sooner or later their lies would catch up with them.
What are they saying? I don't have the stomach to listen to the right wing talk show too often. What are they saying? What is the reason why? Just another sour grape Republican trying to make money off a book? Is that?
Oh, sure. I mean, you know very well they're going to destroy anybody, even their own. They eat their own. You know, look what happened to Paul O'Neill. God, they savaged that man.
Yep. And what about one of the other things I was reading about this week? I'm trying to come off some of these issues, see what your opinion is, because I really expect your opinion. And the Kerry flip-flopping issue that this week Cheney was talking about that's their big thing too, the $87 billion vote that Kerry says he voted for at first, and then he voted against it.
Well, they always forget the devil's in the details on that, and they always forget to add the truth onto it. You know, they always have a little smidgen of truth in what they talk about. And of course, that's the great propagandist way of doing things. Of course, Kerry did vote against that, but it's because they had a rider nailed onto it, like they always. You know, this is a trap. I don't know how the Democrats would not fall into this, but it's a trap they always set. They nail riders onto these things that Kerry and thinking people could never vote for, and then they vote against it because of the rider going. You know, it's like the $87 billion.
He voted for it when it was because he had voted to repeal some of the tax loopholes.
Yeah,
to pay for it.
That's exactly right. The $87 billion. He voted for it originally when he said I voted for it, and then I voted against it. He voted for it when they had an amendment on it to take away $87 billion worth of the rich man's tax cuts to pay for this thing.
Exactly. Then he voted against it when the, like you said, with the rider. And it's just amazing. What was the, who was the politician that said in the debate, quit lying about my record? Was that Reagan that said that when George Bush or to Carter when he said, quit lying about my record in one of the debates? Do you remember
that? Yeah, I do remember. I can't remember. I do remember the great line, Adlai Stevenson saying, if the Republicans, how is it? I don't want to be a George Bush and get this thing backwards. If the Republicans will stop, if they'll promise to stop lying about us, we'll promise to stop telling the truth about them.
And that's what I'd like to see Kerry come out and say. Something like that, you know, something to really get it. But one last thing, though, before I let you go, guys, that what do you think? I'm not too comfortable with this new intelligence czar. I just, something to put that much power in one person's hand. And Kerry's for that, and that kind of bothers me a little bit.
I don't like it, and I don't have to be for 100% of everything my candidate wants. Lord knows none of us are. At least I hope none of the Republicans are for 100% of the thing Bush has done, or that scares the hell out of me. But no, I don't agree with that. And as far as Republicans wanting to do that, that's certainly not something that your father's Republican would ever do, is add another layer to government. I don't like it at all.
What's scary to me, though, is that's one thing I kind of agree with Bush on, he's kind of not for it either, and
well,
that scares me a little bit.
Make the people we have perform. Make them change things so that they can get information out to each other like they ought to. I think the car's just broken. We need to fix it. We don't need a new one.
Exactly. I agree. Thanks, guys. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, Bob. Okay, oh, my. Back to the phone. We've got Fred. Fred, welcome to the show.
Yes, sir. I'd just like to offer some food for thought. I've traveled to Asia and Europe and Latin America, even Canada and Alaska. But I've been down in places where, let's say, Maytag gets washing machines made in another country. And the local wage down there may be $2 a day. And usually they can go down there and they usually offer much higher than the local wage. And I think it does offer the people in that area some hope and some jobs. Now, is it right to do that or should we just give them foreign aid, which gets siphoned off to their politicians?
No, you know,
I think it's a way of giving foreign aid that benefits everybody. It benefits the people in this country too. And I think to say that shipping jobs overseas is bad, I think we're helping other people by doing some production over there without just giving them a handout that the politicians stick in their pocket.
Well, now, Fred, I agree with very much of what you said. In fact, I agree with all of what you said, and I would just add something to it. Normally these jobs we ship overseas do afford a better style of living for the people that get them in these other countries, particularly in Mexico and in India and Pakistan, wherever they're going. The only problem I have with that is we need to keep it fair in as much as they need to have workers' rights, they need to be able to organize, they need to be able to have some benefits like we have in this country. They need to do all the things for their people in their area rather than just rob them with cheap labor. They need to take care of employees the way they're taking care of it so that we keep it on an even keel.
You've got to take take things a step at a time. When you go down there and pay $5 a day, and you have to understand that $5 a day is probably a lot of money in some places. You know, in countries I've traveled, the standard of living is such that I could go out and have a lunch for 50 cents.
Sure.
And so $5 a day may be big money down there. And you got to start somewhere. You can't change their social system because you want to give them a Social Security or something. That's something that's got to come. When they start earning more money, then they will form unions and things like this. But right now, I don't like giving. I've been to a country, I won't mention which one, that I think they used to say that there were 30 powerful families that ran the country. And when we give foreign aid to them, it goes to these families. They own everything, and it never filters down to the people. But when we send a factory down there, by God, the people get some of that money. And I'm glad to see that happen. I sat on an airplane coming back from Latin America one time, and the guy next to me happened to be a U.S. aid worker. And we got to talking about money that goes down under the auspices of helping these countries through USAID. And USAID, by the way, is a huge thing in Latin America. He said that when they structure, let's say USAID decides we need a highway in Brazil, we know what the highway costs. Say it's going to be 100 miles long. It costs $50,000 a mile to build. Well, that money goes into their coffers, and he says within a very few days, he said even, the banks in Miami begin to see deposits. And he says, and the road gets built, but it's substandard. They don't build it the way we intended
sure.
that it be built.
Well, there's graft and corruption in every government, including our own. Hey, Fred, I got to move on. Got a board for the callers. Thank you so much. Good points. Made some good points. We're going to go to Gene in Naples. Gene, welcome to the show.
Hey, good afternoon, guy. You got a great show going. Boy, I tell you, your guests had a lot of interesting stuff to talk about. I want to break the spell for just a second and talk about the convention, which starts Monday, the Democratic convention. And all the Democrats in Southwest Florida, I know there's convention parties going on all over the place. The biggest one in Collier County, just for all your listeners down in Collier County, I want to let them know, and I'm sure you probably already mentioned it, but there's a huge convention party which will be hosted by the Collier County Democratic Party at the Golden Gate Quality Inn in the huge banquet room. It's going to spill out to the patio by the pool. There's tons of entertainment. There's free complimentary hors d'oeuvres for everybody. There'll be a cash bar set up. There's a giant 10-foot TV screen to watch Kerry accept the nomination. It's going to be a fabulous, fabulous night, and it's free for all Democrats. So I want you folks listening out there, especially the local folks, Democrats in Collier County, to mark Thursday night on your calendar from 6 o'clock to 10 o'clock at the Golden Gate Quality, and it's free. Come on out and see hundreds of other proud Democrats celebrating John Kerry and John Edwards nominations for president and vice president of our party. Meet some other candidates there. I know that there'll be a state senate candidate there, county commission candidate will be there. We're hoping one of the senatorial candidates will be there. We don't have confirmation on that yet. And
Gene, I don't want you to forget, I'm sure you won't, but one of our great Democrats in the area is going to have to pay the piper.
I was hoping you'd mention that.
Yeah, and I got to see it, and I will see it.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. Yeah, let me tell that story. I'll try not to take up a lot of your time, but just real quick, about a year, maybe over a year ago, our past president of the Collier County Democrat Club, John Coolidge, just a fine gentleman, a great leader of the party, and we had, I don't know, 100, 150 members of the club at that time, and things were going along real smooth, not a great deal of excitement. He said that he told the membership that if the club membership ever got over 400, that he was going to get a big donkey tattooed on his arm. And, of course, everybody laughed. But then the party caught fire, thanks to George Bush and our nominees, and things went nuts, and Democrats all over the country got excited and started coming out of the woodwork. We now have 402 members as of this past Monday, and John's going to get his tattoo, and we just decided to feature that. We're going to have a tattoo artist coming, Jimbo from down in Gold on Airport Road. Just got a great tattoo parlor down there, and he's a heck of an artist. It's called Body Branding. He's going to come out and do it. He's going to do it gratis because he's a Democrat, and it's going to be fabulous. You're going to see 2 hours of John getting his donkey tattooed because our party has swollen to just phenomenal size now for Collier County, and the energy is going to be there, the excitement is going to be there, and it's going to be a wild night. So everybody's invited, all Democrats in Collier County, Lee County, we don't care where you are. It's the Golden Gate Quality Inn out in Golden Gate, the huge banquet room, complimentary hors d'oeuvres, entertainment, cash bar, a whole lot going on, speakers, meet a lot of the candidates out there. Julie Uresti, our candidate for County Commission of District 3, is going to be there. It's about time we elected a Latino. So we want to invite all our Latino friends out to meet Julie. It's going to be a fabulous night. So thanks for the time to giving me the time, Guy, to mention that on your show. You probably mentioned it earlier.
Oh, well, thanks for calling, Gene. You know, I've got all the folks that don't know, I have privileged information here. I have a life-size picture, an actual size picture of John Coolidge's tattoo. And I got to say, you know, this is going to be a victory tattoo, folks, not only for having over 400 members, but this is going to be a remembrance of the victory that we're going to have on November the 2nd. But to see John get this tattoo, and boy, it's a tattoo that a person can be proud of.
Well, I think he's going to be proud of it. John's through and through Democrat. He'll do anything for the party. And before I let you go, though, there's one guest I forgot to mention that's going to be there, a guy named Guy James.
Oh, yeah.
Going to come by the party, and he's going to speak for a few minutes. So you folks want to meet Guy James in person, all you Guy James fans, and I know they're all over the country. Those of you in the area, come on out Thursday night. Guy will be there along with some other dignitaries. It's going to be a fabulous night for Democrats in Collier County.
Well, Gene, we can run a limo back and forth from Naples International Airport over to the Country Club there for all the Guy James fans that will be flying in for that.
Well, listen, Guy James fans, if they're like most Democrats, they can't afford to fly. They'll probably come in on a boxcar.
Yeah, well.
They're going to be there. You can bet on that.
Gene, thanks so much for calling.
You bet, Guy. Keep up the great work.
And Gene Vaccaro, ladies and gentlemen, president of the Collier County Democratic Club, a Democratic club that I got to tell you is absolutely on fire right now. Oh, yeah. Hey, we're going to go to Scotch in Fort Myers. Scotch, it says here on the screen that you might vote Democratic this year. Is Scotch with us? Okay. Scott, you with us now, Scotch?
Oh, yeah. I thought I was before. Here I am talking to myself.
Sorry about that, Scotch. It says here on my screen that you might vote Democratic this year. What did lightning strike over there or what?
Well, no. I'll tell you what happened. I was looking at the Congress people that we have here in Florida,
mm-hmm.
and there are 25 of them, right?
Yeah.
And there are only 7 of them that are Democrats.
So you're going to try and even things up a little? Or?
Well, I was just looking here. We got Hastings, you know, it's a Democrat, and then Goss is a Republican, and we got Brown, who's a Democrat. We got Catherine Harris, who's a Republican,
mm-hmm.
and we got Boyd, and we got Shaw, who's a Republican. Boyd's a Democrat, and Sam Davis. I don't know where he's from.
I don't either.
He's a Democrat, and. Then we got Micah that's a Republican, and we got Meek and as opposed to Ross Lietman, and we got Wexler as opposed to Foley. And guess what? Every one of those Democrats are more conservative than those Republicans.
Well, it happens.
Well, I know, but I was just thinking, most of the Republicans are voting more liberal than the Democrats.
Well, I think it's been a little trend lately, and... hey, how do you see this Senate race coming down around here with McCollum? What do you think? He's the leading Republican candidate, and I don't know where it's going to end up with on the Democratic side. It's going to be interesting between Betty Castor and Peter Deutsch and the snake from...
Isn't Deutsch running for Senate?
Yeah, he's running against Betty Castor and Deutsch and Alex Pinellas, the Democratic turncoat snake from the east coast of Florida.
Yeah, now, that McCollum, he keeps running all the time, doesn't he?
Yeah, he runs for everything that comes up.
Does he ever win anything?
Well, you know, he was on the impeachment committee.
Oh, was he?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I just don't see him getting in there. I don't know why. I guess maybe I do know why. He's not very good looking. You know, that hurts.
Well, does that mean you and I aren't going to ever get an office either?
Well, that's part of my problem. I've got other problems with that, but that's part of my problem.
Well,
by the way, would you mind if I ask you to I would really like to talk to that Bill. Post my phone number on your internet thing. Your
Bill.
Well, I don't know his last name. He was your first caller.
Oh yeah, Bill from Cape Coral.
Is that where he's from?
Yeah. Are you online?
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay.
That's why, because nobody ever called me.
Okay. Well, when I let you go here, you give Biz your number, and I'll see if I can hook you two up.
Okay. Yeah, I would appreciate that. And
now, you got to be nice to each other, you know. I don't want to cause any problems.
Listen, I'm always nice to everyone but you. You're the only one I'm not nice to.
All right.
And by the way, Gettner, Bob Gettner?
Geltner.
Oh, Geltner?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, he was doing something. I just happened to catch the last part of this on TV last night. I knew Bob years ago. I had lunch with him one time.
For those of you who don't know around here, Bob Geltner is the Democratic State Committeeman from Lee County.
Oh, he is now?
Yeah.
I was just going to ask you. And now, isn't he filing a lawsuit or something?
I don't know.
Okay.
You mean about this strange primary thing we're having?
Yeah, and I just didn't get enough of it to really understand. What's happened there? You guys can't get on the ballot or something?
No, we can't vote because they had the election ready to take place, and at the last minute, one of the developer guy that's running, one of his friends who had already donated money to him put his own name on, so now they can call it a closed primary, and none of the Democrats get to vote on who's going to win that race or the sheriff's race.
Oh, that's a sneaky thing like they have been doing with the Libertarians for years.
Oh, it's bizarre, and, you know, it's got no place in politics. Doesn't matter who does it. If Democrats do it, it's wrong. If Republicans do it, it's wrong. It's wrong.
Yeah. Well, I do want to, before I leave, I do want to say one thing. Here again, I'm going to agree with you today when you said that Janet Reno had broad shoulders, because boy, when those people, the Branch Davidians, got killed, it didn't seem to bother her.
Well,
or when Randy Weaver got killed, she promoted the shootist. So I will say she's got broad shoulders. I agree with you there.
Now I got to ask you something about the Randy Weaver affair, the Ruby Ridge affair.
Yeah,
that didn't take place during the Clinton administration.
You got to ask. It didn't.
No, it took place during George Bush's years. Check it out. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you may have told me something that, but yeah. I was thinking for sure that was in there at that time.
All right, everybody, right. call me stupid next week if I don't have that right. But I believe the Ruby Ridge affair took place under George Bush I. Thanks for your call, Scott. Check
it
out.
Bye bye.
All right. Yes, indeed. And how about this Ralph Nader thing? All of my Nader friends, and I know some of my Democrat friends listen on democraticunderground.com and Democrats. You know, you don't give up easily. You people who are Ralph Nader fans, and let me just say this. As a former owner of a Corvair, you know that's where Ralph Nader got his start, persecuting General Motors over the Corvair. Now, although I never had any problems with my Corvair, in fact, I loved that car. It was a good little car. A lot of people did, and Ralph became the savior of the consumer here in America. Oh, yes, he did so much for so many people, and he was a consumer advocate for so many years and just did a good job. And now he decides in the last few years that he's going to, I don't know. I don't know what Ralph Nader's up to. You know, has there ever been a more pitiful political story than his right now? I mean, here we have a man whom his former party wants nothing to do with him running for president again, swearing up and down that there isn't any difference between the Democratic and Republican Party, when, in fact, what difference is there between Ralph and the politicians he's condemning? Let me explain. Here we have a man who spent a whole lot of his life railing against corporate America at every opportunity he's got. That's how he's gotten to where he is and to be who he is today. But he's being backed by the very symbol of corporate America right now, the Republican Party. The Republican Party is doing everything they can to get Ralph Nader on the ballot of every state they possibly... You know, most of you know this, but it bears repeating. Ralph Nader might as well be on the ticket with Bush Cheney. They might as well call it the Bush Cheney Nader ticket, because the net effect of his candidacy puts him square in their corner. Hell, Republicans are even raising money for him. We talked earlier about this Dick Armey group that's backed by the Koch family. They're out getting petitions signed for Ralph. You know, and as far as I'm concerned, that makes him the ultimate corporate whore, in my opinion, because even Bush hasn't spent most of his adult life condemning the corporate powers that run his administration. Now, old Ralph is in a class by himself. Now, the question is, how many of Ralphie's followers will finally realize that Ralph is not some sort of a knight in shining armor bravely fighting against the political establishment in America? It becomes painfully obvious that Ralph is just another hack who wants his name on the news just to feed his monstrous ego. And, you know, I'll concede that in another day, Ralph was a champion of the little guy. He fought corporate America with conviction and gusto in the name of the little guy. But now, come on, Ralph, let's get serious. How long can you go before the cameras and deny that you're being supported by the Republican Party that you claim to despise, Ralph? How long can you deny that you aren't being propped up financially by the Republicans who are only contributing money to your campaign so you'll siphon off enough votes from the public to ensure Bush's reelection? It's just plain wrong, Ralph. It's plain wrong to do this, just as it's plain wrong to throw away your vote on a man who isn't serious about being president of the United States, but is rather just interested in promoting his own huge ego. You know, when I think about this, nothing politically makes me angrier than to hear Nader supporters claim that Ralphie didn't cause Al Gore the last election. It can't be denied that without Nader in the race, Al Gore would be sitting in the White House right now, and the entire world would be on a different course than the road to disaster we're currently following. I don't care how you cut it. Ralph Nader's off the ballot the last time, and I know what all you people are going to say. All the Democrats are going to say, well, Gore couldn't even carry his home state. He didn't carry Florida. To hell with that. If Ralph Nader wasn't in the race the last time, George W. Bush would never have ascended to the White House. It's that simple. You know, and a vote for Nader is without question a vote for George Bush, and a vote for George Bush is a vote to continue the policies of our most dangerous president we've ever had. The Bush administration has been nothing short of total disaster. It's been a train wreck. So, Ralph, why not give it up? Why not do the honorable thing and throw your 3% behind the man who has a chance to put an end to the Bush administration? Oh, Ralph. Well, we're going to go to Amanda. Amanda, welcome.
Hi, Guy. How are you doing?
Good.
Good. What do you think about Richard Shelby being under investigation and not getting any publicity on?
Oh, what's he? What now?
Richard Shelby, who was on the Intelligence Committee.
From Alabama, right?
From Alabama. He leaked some high intelligence. I think it was on the September 10th before the September 11th. Something about Zero Hour.
This is Richard Shelby, the former Democrat who's now a Republican. Shouldn't we have saved this information until right before the Republican convention?
They mentioned it on one of the media GOP-owned stations, and it ran under the scroll line and then disappeared. Nobody
wow.
heard. They were too busy talking about Sandy Berger to talk about the leaker from the Senate. So, you know, this was, to me, was outrageous. 0 hour on the 10th. There was also a guy that was interviewed from FEMA who got into town, and I've heard that. I'll send you that link sometime, where he said on a Monday night, we got into town, and we couldn't get there. And this is on the 10th, the 10th day of September. So I don't know. You know, I don't know. It all maybe had something to do with maybe they thought something was up and they didn't connect the dots. I'm not talking conspiracy here. I mean, this actually did happen because one of the bigger news agencies recorded the guy. So to me, it's just so strange that everything that the Republican Party does gets under the rug, and every least little thing that a Democrat does, innocent or not, it's blown way out of proportion.
Well, you know, when you're dealing the cards, when you're the dealer and the pit boss and the whole thing, why, you got a little bit of advantage, which they do, and they are sure using it like right now like hell wouldn't have it.
And I got another problem, too. You know, when did this free speech zone become constitutional?
I'd like to know that myself. I think it would have been great. Someone brought up the question, wouldn't it be great if the Democrats could say they don't want a free speech zone at their convention? I wonder if the people at the conventions actually have the power to do that.
I don't know. I know that, you know, you look at the Constitution and the right to assemble peaceably is part of what people have fought and died for. Didn't say anything about razor wire like a concentration camp. And I'm American before I'm any affiliated with any party. So to me, when you cage in any protester, that's not American.
Well, you know, I'd just like to see it be fair. Where was the free speech zone when those people were beating on the door on the election official's office over on the east coast of Florida in the year 2000?
Right, that was more of a mass orchestrated mob, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, there was no free, you know, to me, I can't read anywhere. When did this come into play? Now, they say it was at the WTO, and they didn't want to have that kind of problems. Do you remember the 1968 Democratic Convention?
Oh, do I? I sure do.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't fall apart. People think of all of... Can you imagine how far the African-American would be today if they'd had a free speech zone?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And it irks me really bad that these people have a message that they have to say. You know, dissent is the greatest form of patriotism. You're not going to agree with everything that your government does.
Nope.
Nor should you. And it's up to we, the people, and if you know, whether you're a Democrat or you're a Republican, you should have the privilege to say, I don't agree with this, and I want my elected officials to be heard. And to cage them up with barbed wire, no, there's something very un-American about that.
Yeah, certainly. I certainly agree.
And good luck with the show, Guy. I wanted to give you a call today and say that you had an interesting guest. Got here a little late, and I'll pick it up on the archives and encourage everyone to support.
Well, I'm the lucky one, you know. I've got his phone number, and he's invited me to call him back and chat all I want to, and I certainly will, because the man is a fountain of very useful and credible information. Amanda, thank you for the call.
Okay, and thank you, guys.
Do appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Scotch, if you're still listening, give our producer a call, and she will get you Bill's phone number and get you two hooked up, okay? So, Scotch, Biz, did you already take care of that? You got Scotch all hooked up with Bill, and they can call each other, and all right. And I hope they let me know if they need a referee. So, okay. Now, they're both civil guys. And also, Scotch, for your information, Ruby Ridge happened on August 22nd, 1992. So, George Bush Sr. was the president when... And you know, I'm not going to blame Scotch for thinking that's how it happened, because that's one of those things that the Republicans throw at the wall and hope it sticks, and it has. You will find, if you go to many of the people who hated Bill Clinton and all, they will indict him with the responsibility of the Ruby Ridge thing, and simply wasn't true. So that's just one little example of how things get turned around in the wrong direction if we allow it. We should do a better job on that. Right now we're going to go to John in Cape Coral. John, welcome to the show.
By the way, I have had lunch with Scott Chu. Nice fellow to talk to.
All right, nice, yeah. Civilized.
I don't agree with him on a lot of things, but we had a delightful lunch.
Well, good.
So I just want to throw that out. Some of us who agree to disagree sometimes sit down and do talk to each other and have some very pleasant discussions. And it's always interesting. A couple of things, if I can. One, your guest of the afternoon I thought was fascinating, and I must pay you a little compliment for having him on. The issue of the Sudan, I was thinking as he was talking, and I thought there was one problem with the discussion and the reason that there's not too much attention, and it's not something that you can change. Your radio. If somebody would go over there with cameras and really do a vivid documentary and get it on one of the news channels, or even a movie like Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11, but really vividly show this to this country and the world, I think there would probably be a difference because we're visual as we look at things.
John, you know, you're so right. Where, you know, and the responsibility for that lies with the media. This is a huge story. Why aren't they over there covering this story like they covered the buildup to the Iraq War?
That's just my question. I thought I'd bring it out because, you know, you can talk about anything. But, if you have pictures and you show what's happening to the people and the living conditions that he was describing and people saw it, I think you'd have a different reaction.
You're certainly right. I agree 100%.
And I don't know the why, but I throw it out there in a challenge. Somebody with the news media or connected to the news media, and since you're going nationwide, maybe somebody will pick it up.
Well, you know, where is Fox? Where is CBS, CNN? They've done little tidbits on it, but not an in-depth coverage like it ought to be.
And even 60 Minutes.
Yeah, it's a human tragedy of major proportions, and my God, where are we in this world that we can't help out in a situation like that?
Anyway, that was one thought. Second thing, all this talk about George Bush, you know, I was thinking you made a comment before, and I thought I'd pick up on something you said, and I think it's a major thought. Especially after 9/11, and one of the big advertisements I hear coming out of the Republicans, and I hear from George Bush, and I hear from these right-wing talk show hosts, we just have a few on the air, are we really, and not only, I want to use a key word, are we feeling safer than we did? Has George W. Bush made any of us really feel safe?
That's a good question.
My thinking is, at one moment, yes, we haven't had a major incident, yes, on our shores, but we are constantly warned day by day that it can happen again. It's just a question when and not if. And we hear these terror threats, you know, the colors, the yellow, the orange, the red. I mean, it doesn't make me feel safe. Do I feel like traveling? No. You know, if you don't have to travel, do you really want to travel? As you go through all the security to get on airplanes, do you feel safe? Do you feel comfortable? Do we feel like this is a safer world that we're living in? And I somehow have my doubts. I don't, you know, and I'm not talking, are we safer? I'm saying, do we feel safer?
I don't.
And this is one of the big advertising points that they're making about Bush. He has made us feel safer. And I don't see where he's accomplished that. And when I read the 9/11 report and hear about the 9/11 report and all the failures that took place before, all the failures of what's been done afterwards with the intelligence community, do I feel safer? No, I just feel very lucky that things haven't happened. But there's a difference between those two things.
You're exactly right. And where do we as the public differentiate between how safe we were during Clinton, how safe we were during Bush? I mean, you know, the millennium thing. Everybody knew they were coming after us during the millennium, and they claim they put a stop to that. Bush is saying, well, he's responsible for keeping us safe since 9/11. How do we know? I don't know.
Well, you know, there is one thing that has been said, and again, it's a feeling. Do I feel that this country is as respected in the rest of the world and the rest of the world is working with us? And that's important. You know, one of the big differences, Kerry has said, when he takes office, he wants to get the rest of the world working with us. Well, but we do know that outside of England, the major countries of this world do not respect George W. Bush.
Oh, no, not at all.
And I've had a few talk show hosts argue with me on that, but I think it's certainly true. I mean, we look at France as the enemy these days.
Yep.
We look at Germany as the enemy. Russia we've alienated. Countries are pulling out of Iraq as their people are losing their heads or threatening to lose their heads. This coalition is falling apart. You know, part of safety is knowing the rest of the world is with you. At least that's the way I view it.
You're right. I agree. I do.
Well, it makes a bad television. telephone call because I guess we should get agreement.
Am I supposed to bang on the table and say, hell no, I don't agree with anything you've said? Would that make better radio?
Much better radio.
All right.
I guess I do better with the right-wing talk show host. What can I tell you?
Hey, I always respect your opinions on it. You've always got something good to say.
Well, I appreciate the compliments, even if it doesn't make good talk radio. And keep up the good work.
Thank you very much, John.
Take care.
Good to hear from you. Yeah, he's right, except for England. And of course, one thing to keep in mind, yes, the leader of the Great Britain is a George Bush fan, I guess. The people certainly aren't. The people in Canada certainly aren't. I'd like to know what country in the world they're talking about that's got all this respect for George Bush. The people in Iraq, despite what they would have you say, do not have respect for George Bush. I just like to know. I really would. I'd like to know. I mean, I've seen many, many, many polls lately, if you will, studies from around the world saying that the United States' image around the world is at an all-time low. An all-time low. And that's to me, that helps me not feel safer. I think... you know, I worry about our image around the world, and it's not good right now. Hey, we're going to pause for a break right now. You're listening to the Guy James Show, 1200 WPTK, Fort Myers, Florida. We'll be right back after these words.
The Guy James Show.
Once upon a time, in a small cottage, lived a boy named Chuck. One day, Chuck heard a knock from inside the wall.
Who is it?
He cried, for Chuck cried rather easily.
It is I, the energy hog, over here,
said a voice. Now, an energy hog is what you have when people waste energy. Chuck ran to tell his family.
There's a hog in our house!
Exclaimed Chuck.
That's no way to talk about your Aunt Melba,
said his mother, and sent him to his room.
That does it,
said Chuck. He raced to his computer and logged on to energyhog.org.
I'll just have to get rid of it myself.
At energyhog.org, Chuck played cool games and learned to use energy wisely. He learned that by switching to better light bulbs, he had the power to rid the cottage of the evil energy hog forever.
I'm leaving, but I shall return,
vowed the hog.
Don't count on it, bacon breath,
vowed Chuck. And the moral of the story is, to use energy wisely, log on to energyhog.org, or a switch in time, save swine.
This public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Lila Jaber with the Florida PSC. I want you to know about two programs that can help make phone service affordable for all Floridians, Lifeline Assistance and Link Up Florida. If you already qualify for certain public assistance benefits, Lifeline can save you up to $11.35 on your monthly phone bill, and Link Up can reduce your initial hookup fee by up to $30. For a free brochure, call us at 1-800-342-3552 or visit our website at floridapsc.com.
If knowledge is power, then Power Talk 1200 is your source for news and information, plus today's most powerful talk program. Now, Power Talk 1200 brings you the resources of ABC News at the top of every hour, plus the recognized name in business with the CNBC report throughout your workday at 30 minutes past the hour. ABC News and CNBC Business Reports. Knowledge is power. Power Talk 1200, WPTK.
Now, back to the nation's number one Democratic talk show host, Guy James.
You betcha, baby. This is the nation's number one Democratic liberal talk show. We're liberal and proud of it. Don't call me progressive. Call me a liberal Democrat, okay? If you want to hang progressive on into that, that's okay. But I am a liberal Democrat, and proudly so. Hey, you know, we're going to see our candidates quite a bit. Well, not quite a bit on the major networks, but we're going to see our candidates this coming week, Mr. Kerry and Mr. Edwards, and we're going to see a lot of them, hopefully. That is, if the networks pay attention to them. You know, the networks have really dimmed their lights on Kerry. Bush has been getting four times the mention on the networks that... Kerry's been getting four times, folks, and that's that liberal media everybody's always talking about, huh? And I want to give you a quick insight to what kind of a man we have on the ticket with John Kerry, and I'm talking about, of course, Senator John Edwards.
And I picked up this little story about him that it's just one more thing that impressed me about the great humanity of this man, a trial lawyer. Yeah, well, he's a trial lawyer that fought for the little guy. They can scream trial lawyer all they want to. I'm proud he's a trial lawyer. And if I ever need a trial lawyer, if some big corporate entity has run over me, I'll take a guy like John Edwards any old day. But one little story I found, and I thought it might interest some of you folks who are John Edwards fans, and even if you're not. Democratic vice presidential candidate John Edwards was on his way to work at the Capitol when terrorists struck in New York and Washington on September 11, 2001. But he says he declined to join other members of the Senate at a secure location because his family would not be with him. His wife, Elizabeth, was out shopping. Eldest daughter, Kate, was at college in New Jersey. Youngest daughter, Emma Claire, was at school. And son, Jack, I'm not exactly sure where he was. But anyway, Capitol Police were whisking members of Congress to secure locations for their safety. And that's all well and good. That's what they're supposed to do. Edwards said, "Well, what about my wife and kids?" He told this to Larry King. And they said, "Well, they'll stay here," they told Edwards. And I said, "Well, if they're staying here, I'm staying here." So there's, Kerry saves a man's life in the middle of a war zone, and Edwards refuses to go into hiding like Mr. Bush and Dick Cheney. Who's got the better values amongst those two? Family values? Talking about John Edwards and John Kerry. Big news also on polls right now. Kerry's overtaken Bush in some of the swing states. Folks, I've got it looking good on the electoral maps right now. I've got Kerry with a comfortable lead on electoral maps. And don't say I'm jinxing him because I'm predicting him a winner, but I do think he's going to win the electoral college rather easily. It's not going to be a huge landslide, but I don't think it's going to be that close either. And I do believe we're going to win Florida, given the fact that we can get a fair election here. But Ohio is looking good. Oregon's looking good. Pennsylvania's looking good. Michigan's looking good. Missouri's even looking good. A lot of these swing states, we may be able to win this election without Florida. And that would make me feel a whole lot better. And one of the things that is important is right now, Bush's support among Hispanics is slipping badly. And Reuters had an article from Reuters. President Bush is trailing his Democratic challenger, John Kerry, by a big margin amongst potential Hispanic voters, according to a new survey of Latino attitudes toward politics released on Thursday. The article goes on to say, Kerry and his vice presidential choice, John Edwards, have the support of 62% of the Hispanics polled, while Bush and Dick Cheney has only 32% support, according to a joint survey by the Pew Hispanic Center and the Kaiser Family Foundation. The survey poll was done between July 12th and 20th and has a margin of error of 3.5%. So it's looking good, and particularly when you talk about Florida and Arizona, both states that went very narrowly to Bush, and the Hispanic population in both those states is looking good for Kerry. I like our chances in those two races. And, here's a sad thing for a political talk show to be talking about. This came from El Paso, New Mexico, I guess. This is actually where this came from, the El Paso Times. Station polls liberal show after threats. Now, I know something about this sort of thing. A Silver City radio station yanked a liberal talk show off the air because of pressure from advertisers, the station's owner says. And quoting him, he said, "It's a shame that in America we can't have someone with an opposing view," said Matt Runnels, owner of KNFT. The one-hour daily show, Radio Free Silver, hosted by Kyle Johnson, was canceled Monday after running for about 6 weeks on KNFT. 6 weeks. Runnels said 20 to 25 advertisers, including car dealers, bankers, pizza stores, and furniture stores, threatened to pull their spots from KNFT if the show continued. What do you call that? Extortion? Isn't that what that is? Extortion? I don't know. Yeah, we had somebody call in and told our producer, said, there's always two sets of lawyers, so everyone is a trial lawyer. Well, that's exactly true. But in John Edwards' case, we had a trial lawyer on one side representing the little guy, and on the other side of the coin, we had somebody representing corporate America. And there's a big difference between those two. One time, many years ago, I had a business and had a lease on a building, and a guy from a huge conglomerate, big oil company, I should say, that owned the building where I had this in, and I had a 99-year lease. And one day, and a successful business in this building, by the way, and one day, a gentleman from this big company walked in the door and said, I want you to close this business down and be out of here in about 30 days. And I said, well, I've got a 99-year triple net lease. There's nothing you can do to me. And he says, I'll tell you what. He says, why don't you go up to Cleveland? And you know where this corporation's building is. And he said, get on the elevator and go up to the fifth floor. And I said, why the fifth floor? And he says, because the entire fifth floor is nothing but lawyers. That's my point. Big corporate lawyers. And he said, they'll get you one way or another, no matter how long it takes. So, you know, there you go. Trial lawyer against the big guy. Hey, I want to thank you so much for listening to the program today. We really appreciate it. As always, you're listening to the Guy James Show. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you next week, gang.
The Guy James Show is the cooperative effort of a talented and dedicated staff. Executive Producer, Gene Charles. Research Director, Michael Merrick. Production Manager, Frank Princeton. Program Coordinator, Martha Simon. We thank the staff for their continued dedication, and we thank you, the listeners, for your interest in our show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. This has been The Guy James Show.
Of the hour, and the news is next. This is WPTK Pine Island Center, the station for Power Talk. Power Talk 1200.
Boston becomes an armed fortress ahead of a Democratic National Convention. I'm Joan Bennett, ABC's Aaron Katursky in Boston.
Security checkpoints staffed by the U.S. Secret Service are now up and running, and it takes an hour and a half to get through the line. Metal barricades and Boston police officers surround the arena. Armed military police can be seen atop buildings and along elevated train tracks. Dump trucks packed with sand block the streets.
Demonstrators aren't pleased with a plan to restrict protesters to a 28,000 square foot